Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. Shannon Guss here, getting you ready for our Australian Survivor Week 1 recap and exit interview, setting up what you're about to hear in the content for the week. So we did have a recap with Rob. That was very fun for about 2 hours and 20 minutes. And then after that, we have an exit interview with Gavin Wanganeen. We just got the one exit interview this week. Things are a little sporadic right now, and hopefully the exit press will become a little consistent later in the season. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side.
£1 million.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Brains versus Brawn. I'm your host, Shannon Guss, here to talk about week one. We are on. We are in it. There is no turning back now. And it was a roller coaster week that I think ended on a high. I think that we are at the best possible point, especially because I loved episode 3, and I'm excited to talk about it all with my guest. Such a good guest and such a kind guest who is watching at least a season of US Survivor at the moment, Big Brother, everything else. I don't even know what else he's watching. And we also roped him into a week of Australian Survivor, which is a lot of content. So I need to welcome in the reason we are all here. It is the great Rob Cesarino. Rob, thank you for being here and for watching so much Survivor for us.
Yes, Shannon. Oh, I've got my tea and my Bicky, and I'm looking at my pictures of my family, and I'm very excited to talk about this very exciting opening week.
Are you crying? While you look at the photos of your family?
Yes, yes.
I feel like people were very judgmental about that. People are like, it's been 6 days. I mean, I don't know if they had to quarantine beforehand. I assume they did. And look, when I was on Top Model, which you would hope would be less hard than this, but honestly was really hard. Like, I remember calling my parents 3 days in and just sobbing, okay? Reality TV is really hard. Let's not judge the contestants for shedding a few tears when they, you know, are reminded of home.
Was that a thing? I mean, I had avoided all of the discourse about these episodes because that I was like, and watching them later than other people were. And so, come on. Take it easy, everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Reality TV is hard. 6 days on Survivor probably feels like 60 days. And there are worse things than, you know, showing a bit of human emotion. So I say that as someone who would cry at anything, let alone, you know, like, well, are we judging crying now? Anyway, I could cry right now. I won't. Rob, this was such a roller coaster week, up and down, you know, huge moments. Some things made me angry. A lot of things made me happy. Some things made me sad. All the emotions, really. Like, what were your thoughts on this huge first week of Australian Survivor?
Well, I think that there's a lot to talk about. I think it was really compelling that I really loved how beautiful everything looked. Yeah. I mean, this was like a exciting throwback. I mean, I had been a proponent of Survivor US shooting a domestic season and what might have been. And I really applaud Survivor Australia for going ahead or Australian Survivor for going ahead and figuring out a way to get it done in Australia. And as somebody who has recently watched Survivor the Australian Outback, like, this was very fun to go back to that location, which is like a classic, iconic Survivor locale and do a season there now in HD.
Yeah, like, no, it looks great. Like, I think, you know, you said you stayed away from the discourse. I think when it kind of came out with that Mad Max cars driving towards each other kind of, like, epic feel, and Australian Survivor is always, like, I think the most epic of the franchises, for better or worse. And I think everyone just kind of loved the look of it, the feel of it, and that it felt just, like, really a show of our country, which was really cool, and just, yeah, there's no other word, really, other than epic.
And stylistically, that they, it's so much more cinematic, I feel like, than U.S. Survivor, especially like the opening week where they do the flashbacks to people in their home. I don't know why U.S. Survivor has never adopted this. It is always like it makes the show feel so much bigger in scope in terms of like that. It's, you know, very much like you're watching a movie to cut back and forth between their real life and what's happening on the island. And the new introduction that they've done this season of to go like to the full card, like day three.
Yeah, I
like,
love that.
It's so dramatic. Mm-hmm. And, it's
like a documentary.
Yeah. And that to me, that it just looks incredible. So it's very fun to watch.
Yeah, like with the red and the yellow tribes, and it's like a sunburned country. I think it looks really, really cool. I feel like the U.S. used to on a smaller scale, like old school, we kind of see not like a whole big kind of package of that person, but we'd see kind of like thinking of like Tina in her office, or what was Tina, like a nurse? What was Tina?
I think she was, did they say she was a nurse or a flight attendant? I think
whatever
she was a nurse.
It was, I remember her like with her arms crossed, like they used to, at the old school, surely you also had it, like they used to go to people in their home life and just like a shot of them, yeah, but not the whole
a
like
shot.
Minute, yeah.
Yeah, this is like so amazing when they go back and like when they choose to do it, at what moment, like it's so well done.
I mean, U.S. Survivor does not have time to spend a minute, you know, spending time at the home life of every contestant. They cut out the previously on, they cut out the opening credits, like they're not going to spend the time with it. But we have time, not time to get to every contestant, but we have time to go back to the home life of many people. Kind of, you know, try and make a bit of a movie style thing about it. And that really is how it comes across.
To the point where if a person doesn't get one, it's like, I don't care about them.
Yeah. What is you? What's your cool job? Because it's interesting.
Do you even have a life?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing, and we got a few questions about this, like the whole thing about it is even when Jonathan is like calling the challenges or in all of the marketing or on the previously on, it's like you're not just like Georgia, you are forensic psychologist Georgia, you know, you are pain researcher Haley, because it is also profession tied and they all have just like ridiculously accomplished jobs. I think like the way they want us to get to know them, especially if they have like really brainy or brawny professions, is like through their job. So like the home life thing is very important.
Yeah. And then they always spin it of how their occupation is going to like be the perfect thing that's going to prepare them for Survivor and why they're going to win the game because of what they do outside of Survivor. It's just really great.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is great. Why not? Because I was interested in your thoughts, because in the preseason, we talked a lot about how it was like champions versus Janelle, dearly departed Janelle, who had like no chance on the season as like the only normal regular person. And we, you know, we talked about how everyone was like a world champion in something. World champion wood chopper gets a wood chopping challenge straight off the bat. That's the kind of thing that we're doing here. How did you feel about that? Because, you know, I think there was a bit of a disconnection there for some people, but then again, epic, it leans into it
that they
are
ended
all
up-
world champions, like, or like, because the thing is, the backstory of everyone is, you know, you see Gavin Wanganeen, AFL, like, complete legend, like, Flick is a champion surfer. Like, when they're doing the packages from home, more often than not, it's like, oh my god, you are about to be enveloped by that giant wave, or you are a, like, highly successful model. Like, what would my package be? It would just be me sitting here in this room. Like,
no,
you know,
you
like
are
a regular
champion
person.
Podcaster. Stop it.
It would not lend itself to the package, Rob. Like, it wouldn't work. I'm in my pajamas. I'm always in my pajamas. Like, it wouldn't work for the package.
I mean, you think you're alone? You think that other people are getting dressed?
You're also in your pajamas?
Not that many.
Yeah,
very few people that I talk to.
Okay, but every person on Australian Survivor is getting dressed. That's the difference. That is it. You've literally just picked up on it. That's who they cast. They cast people who get dressed in the morning, and that's just not someone that I can relate to.
Yeah. Okay. Well, luckily on Survivor, you don't have to get dressed that much.
Yeah, that must be a big departure for them because they're used to, you know, putting on a suit, having a successful career in life.
You know, that's a classic Gerald.
Yeah.
Puts on his suit every morning.
Okay, not Gerald, office. But he's a champion woodchopper. Everyone else, Joey, high flyer, you know, Kara, high flyer. It's just a high flying cast of flyers. Sorry, I just watched The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. He's a pilot. So I'm a bit like in that mode. Is there anyone that sticks out for you on the cast as like a favorite?
Well, I have to say that I love George so much.
Yeah. He stands out.
He certainly stands, not just to me, he stands out on his own. But he was so fun to watch in this season. And I feel like that I know he's not going to be everybody's cup of tea or Vicky, but he's just to me that you need somebody like this on every Survivor season.
Yeah, I mean, we got a few questions like, how am I meant to feel about George? Am I meant to love him? Am I meant to hate him? Am I meant to be rooting for him? Like, it's all of those things. That's what makes him a great character. Like, one moment, you're criticizing him. You might be, like, put off by him in some way. The next moment, when he wins the challenge for the Brains Tribe after no one is listening to him, he's completely dismissed. Like, if you're not out of your seat and cheering, you may not have a heart. I hate to break it to you. So, like, he will make you feel all the emotions. That's the point. Like, we're not just meant to feel, like, one way about these people.
Yes, complicated character.
Yes.
And he was really, really fun to watch. And we're going to talk about him a lot. You know, I felt like that in the beginning of the week, like I was going to be all about like, I won't know anything about the Braun Tribe. I'll just know everything about the Brains Tribe. But I really feel like that. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some standouts on the Brains Tribe, but I feel like that I don't really know. And maybe it's because the Braun Tribe went to the two consecutive tribal councils.
Yeah.
And I feel like that I am having a much harder time distinguishing, I know George, Joey, Mitch, Way, and Rachel on the Brains Tribe. And then I couldn't tell you about anybody else that's still in the game on the Brains Tribe.
Well, it becomes easier with Braun. Like, they get split into, like, two really clear factions. So when you think about the tribe, you can, in your mind, like, think about these alliances. Like, it's all quite vague on Brains. They barely went to tribal council. It's kind of just, like, everyone versus George. And I think from an editing perspective, like, a trap they might fall into and are falling into is, like, there is a bit of a George hole happening where if you're George, you get screen time. If you're talking to or about George, you will get screen time. If you're not, you know, kind of interacting with George in some way, it might be difficult for you. So I think that they need to, you know, be careful of that, especially as I don't really feel George is long for the game. And then when we go and have this like flame out kind of edit, and then when we be left with an entire tribe of people, we just have no idea about them other than how they feel about George, who then will not be on the show.
Jenna, give me the chances George makes the merge in this season.
Look, I would say zero, but then look at Australian Survivor. Like, George probably gets voted out three times, and he's saved by every non-elim. And, you know, like, so you can't say on Australian Survivor that there's no chance. You just have no idea on this show.
I feel like he's got, like, 30%.
Really? Yeah, I mean, look, tough one for George. they again, he has not really been to a tribal council. He's not been part of a vote, and I'm still kind of impressed that he's there still. So that's where it's at. And I do want to talk about it because obviously, like, he defines the premiere, especially. We got this huge twist, which I have thoughts about. For me, like, in terms of like the whole week, it got better and better for me. I felt very burned by the first vote. By the twist, by like, I thought, I'm like, this is epic, this is fun, this is so cool. And then the twist comes in and it just took all the air out of the balloon for me, where like the strategizing was all irrelevant and I knew it was going to be so unfair.
I've been looking forward to talking about this with you because I actually, before I saw the episode, I saw your tweet about how that you really didn't, you did not like the twist and you felt like that it was really overpowered. And I have to say that I actually really did like it. And I thought it was a really cool idea on the part of production. And I think that George terribly misplayed it.
Yes.
But I think it actually was something that could have been really powerful for him if he played it in the right way.
Okay. And I actually don't think this could ever be powerful. I think this is like a really tricky advantage to use. I think George used it like particularly wrong, but I'm trying to like explain to me your perspective on how you think this is like a good production decision, because it's powerful, but it's also the first episode.
So on a lot of different levels, I really thought it was smart because the first thing it's going to do is that it is, you know, a big decision for somebody. You know, should I use it or should I not use it? And of course, like in the hands of George, or King George, as he would be later on this week, he's going to use the advantage. So that's going to be exciting to watch. And then with Australian Survivor, we have this big tribe of 12 people, and that's a lot to sort of unpack in the first episode. Now, the show actually did not do a great job of like setting up where it like didn't necessarily become easier to figure out what was going to happen or who was necessarily there when we got it down to 6 people. But on paper, I could see like, okay, well, this will be like easier to digest for the audience, 6 people voting as opposed to 12 people voting, where you saw in the it's like the Braun tribe themselves could not keep track of 12 people voting at the second tribal council. So I really did like that. And then, of course, you get the big advantage play at the tribal council, which is always going to be exciting. But for George, you know, he seemed to make a bond with Wei, and he used it to sort of like grandstand a little bit about how that he was going to protect the people who were, I forget exactly how he described it, I think that was more in the second episode.
Yeah.
The people that were worthless, getting to know better.
No. Yeah,
not worthless. not say they were. He made a big thing about how that is that really how we're going to judge our society of the people that are strong? And, you know, I don't think that should be the criteria. And so he like picked the 5 people arbitrarily and left. And his whole thing was that he has this axe to grind against Mitch. And I really think what he should have done is removed himself and all of Mitch's people from the tribal council. And then Mitch looks up and it's all the people that he potentially like that would have and maybe George was all alone with it. Nobody else wanted to.
I think that is quite likely. I think that might be the issue.
But could you imagine a scenario where George went ahead, like talked to 5 people and said, OK, here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take all the other votes out of tribal council. You sit there with Mitch. Mitch looks up and there's 5 people that also feel like that they want to get rid of me. He had to leave himself, but he got to take 5 other people, like take Mitch's allies away with you, and then leave Phil and Wei and whoever else might have been like minded. And then they vote out Mitch at that tribal council. Like, he didn't leave marching orders. I mean, he hoped Mitch had been voted out, but he did not give like a blueprint to anybody. And I don't know if he was allowed to, but to me, that I think that is something that would have been really interesting to see, where he could have then gotten the numbers advantage, where he sort of got like the worst of all worlds out of this advantage, where he used it, he pissed everybody off.
Yeah.
Somebody who was probably like-minded to how he felt about, like, okay, you know, this is Mitch's dictatorship, and what, you know, why is Mitch calling the shots? I don't know if we ever saw Phil like articulate that, but I think that being the first person voted out, I think that they probably ended up thinking that after
could have been like a natural ally for George, you would think.
Yeah. And so that George should have found his people, told them his plan, and then gave them the marching orders, and then left with all of the Mitch allies.
Yeah, okay, I see that perspective. I have a lot of thoughts on all of this. I'm trying to, like, separate it, because I want to go back to, like, why I don't think this was a good twist before I discuss why I think George played it badly. I think they're different things. Like, just because George played it badly doesn't make it a bad twist. Like, that could be fun to analyze. I think that, you know, a lot of the things you said, for example, there are 6 people. That's easy to keep track of. I bet you $5 right now, Rob, you can't tell me which 6 people voted in that tribal council. I think I would struggle to tell you which 6.
You would be right. You would be correct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that give me 12 on week, you know, episode 2 or 3. I think you'd have a better shot of telling me how 12 people voted compared to the 6. And because those votes had meaning, that was a tribe of people with intention going about it in their way. You know, once he took out 6 people, like, I literally had to write down who it was because it felt, you know, it became completely arbitrary. So yes, it's 6 people, but it's also just like, because George played it in that particular way, it did take meaning out of it. But I do think from a TV perspective, like, no more clarity was given. It felt completely random, maybe due to the overpoweredness of the twist and also just the, maybe the lack of intentionality that George played it with. So I think, I don't think that really necessarily helps in terms of TV. I just think, like,
fair.
It is a big moment, and that's why they did it, because we also got questions like, why on earth? Like, why would they do this? They want to be like, you know, the shocking moment. And yes, there's going to be fallout, and yes, it's drama. But to me, it's like a very sad lack of faith in their own product. Like, yes, it will be watchable, and it will make you feel something for sure. It gives us something to talk about. But, like, don't you trust your cast, your setting, your theme to, like, give us an interesting first episode without it having to, like, you know, undercut the very fabric of the game as we know it, which it does. You know, like, Phil, what can Phil do here? And I know that Survivor's not fair, and I know that Australian Survivor is particularly unfair. You know, you sign your soul away in the show more than other franchises. It's something even we've discussed before in terms of, like, the editing, the Frankenbites, zero confessionals. You become truly a character, like, a more of a manufactured character, I would say, than any other franchise. And in terms of the game, yeah, you sign up to non-eliminations, you vote someone out, they come back in, now you've, you know, it's hard. And it, and you've signed, you know, Phil signed away their rights, I guess, as a contestant. It clearly, like, look what happened to them. But look, I just feel this was a bridge too far. Like, so overpowered to take 6 people out, to take them out on the first tribal council where relationships are already so vague. Vague for us as the viewer, vague in terms of the connections. Mm-hmm. And to do it at tribal council where there is no room to move. Like, for me as a viewer, I'm like, this is so unearned. What can I say about Phil? What did they do wrong? What can I hang my hat on at all with this? So, yes, something to talk about, huge moment, something we'll remember forever. It's the kind of thing where in a few years from now, you'll say, what happened in that premiere? And we'll probably all talk about it. We might still be a little mad. I know I'll be. But surely there's a way to not, like, to have a big moment, to have a really interesting premiere without, again, just, like, cutting through the game. Like, there has to be some semblance of game to this, surely.
I felt like that there was, in that George had to make a decision. And again, the decision that I don't think he chose the right people. But if we had a premiere episode where the first tribal council would have been a 10-2 vote where Wei is the first person voted out, like, I feel like that that's a lot less of an interesting way, no pun intended, to get into the season.
Yeah, and I do see that, and it's something we talked about in the season of Survivor South Africa, because Immunity Island does save the way. Like, it saves the one person who the other tribe sends to this island, you know, who's not going to be the presumptive first boot, and there's a lot of strategy to it. But again, it's done after the immunity challenge, and it's done with one person. Like, to me, like, you think about, like, Ghost Island, for example, like, Jacob Derwin gets saved and Stephanie Gonzalez gets screwed on that, but she has, like, the entire day to strategize around it, and it's just one other person. Like, to take 6 people out, like, at what point are you just, like, spinning a wheel? And I get that, like, possibly the way that George played it was a lack of intention or strategy that we can kind of criticize here, took away, like, all meaning from it, where it would have been, like, slightly meaningful before. But I still think, like, even say Mitch goes. Not Phil. To me, that would have felt more strategically earned. It would have felt to me like, for example, like Silas getting screwed, where it's like, all right, you definitely did get screwed by, like, a pretty unfair twist that was unforeseeable, but we can kind of talk about how, like, you shouldn't have put yourself out so much as a leader, and there are mistakes that were made here just, like, socially in the game, and we can kind of derive meaning from that as analysts. With Phil, because George played it, again, with less meaning, with less decision-making that we can agree with, it really did feel, like, completely unearned. It still would have been hugely unfair. Like, are we just past fairness in the game now? Like, is this okay to just screw over human beings? Like, this is just not a game anymore. It's just a TV show where I just, like, push a button and let them fall through the floor? Like, surely not.
I just feel like somebody is going to get screwed no matter what. It's the first tribal council.
No, but they should
like,
earn
somebody's going to get an unfair break. And I don't think that Phil earned it. The only thing I could say for Phil that Phil could have done, I didn't see Phil really try to like make the case why it should have been somebody else. I think that Phil just sort of let it be that Phil was the first person voted out of the tribe. I didn't see anybody in that group really like making the case. And really, I think the theme of Australian Survivor, more so than U.S. Survivor, is what do you do when somebody throws a spanner in the works? And that's really what happened at this first tribal council. George comes in, throws the big spanner in the works, and then who was able to respond to that? It seemed like that nobody really did anything other than, okay, let's just go down the pecking order of like, okay, who was the next worst person in challenges?
But Phil was really good in the challenge. I think it was a perceived strength. Like, Phil was particularly good on untying the knots, I think because they're a crochet artist, and I assume that untying knots and crochet have some sort of like, I don't know, connectivity there. I don't know anything about crochet art, clearly, still.
It makes sense. Story checks out.
Exactly. Like, I think they've done fine in the challenges, and they did have a really, I thought, very fair confessional about being like, I'm not someone who's going to be the best at the challenges, but if the whole tribe is kind of going unanimously on one person, I'm just going to kind of hide in that for the moment. I thought that was really fair strategy until, yes, it all gets blown up. And I would agree with you. Australian Survivor is the franchise where, more than anyone else, you need, always in the back of your mind, you go in with your plan, but always have 1% of you thinking, but if Jonathan says something or someone says something just out there in this tribal council, like, I have a name and I'm just going to throw it to. Like, I've got like some sort of backup plan. I just think it was really hard in that moment because it was so unforeseeable. It was so late. It was so shocking. And I think, you know, Phil votes for Haley. They're probably just thinking, you know, the strength mantra has been happening for the last 2 days. There's no way I can change that. All I can hope is that they don't perceive me as the weakest because I don't really have any other time to change that perception. And it is interesting around earning it because the other boot would have been Wei. And to say Wei earned being the first boot feels unfair. You know, she's the weakest, again, quote unquote, in the challenges. She seems like key in puzzles, but I guess it doesn't matter to the brains. And then
and I don't think that really happened yet.
She was the puzzle caller in the first challenge, and they lost. Yes. She like made up some ground, but she hadn't won it for them. And like we've talked about the issues of representation, she talks about how it's not just challenges; like she's not finding her footing socially. So while it would have felt earned that there were reasons we would have known she's gone, the meaning behind it would have been more meaningful. But that meaning would have been like really sad. But like surely there's ways around like saving these first boots, again, talked about in Survivor South Africa, like surely there's ways of helping people who never get a footing in this game for reasons that just feel so unfair and Survivor's not fair and first impressions aren't fair, all of those things. Like surely there's a way to do that without breaking the game.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that this broke the game. And I felt like
12
that, you know,
people wrong.
Yeah, I look like was it fair? No, yes. But I thought it was at least interesting for me as a viewer to see what was going on there. As a player, I don't really know how you could necessarily do it. Again, I would have liked to have seen more sort of like campaigning from the six people that were left about like, okay, now here's what we're going to do. I mean, if this was U.S. Survivor, they're going to get up out of the chairs and then going to go and talk it through a little bit more. And I think everybody was just like more stunned after it happened. But when you're producing this show and we're trying to say, OK, like, well, how do we save the people that are going to be like the traditional first boots? Like, I think that you're like looking at different ideas. And look, like, I don't need to explain this to you. I mean, you're a Survivor producer. I'm not. I am but a humble podcaster. But I think we need to sort of like, throw some ideas out there to sort of like shake up the status quo. And unfortunately for Phil, like it landed on them, but it could have been a situation that, could have benefited both Wei and Phil at the first tribal council.
But like the solution is because also George just happened to find it to help Wei. Like, you know, every other person in that tribe other than Wei finds it and she still goes home. Like, the way to do it is that the other tribe says, you know, send someone to an island. Sorry, I can only have Immunity Island on the brain right now. But they clearly send Wei because she's like clearly on the outs or like clearly did the worst in the challenge. Now she's safe. or someone finds something that saves themselves and one other person, like literally an idol, like just one person. Because like no one's even been idled out as a first boot. That's how early this is. And then six people were taken out of the tribe. Like it's just, it's so early as well.
Yeah. Well, what I liked about the idea of six, and I think that there was a beauty in it, in that if George played this correctly, it's like I can build my six with this, you know, because it's like if you did it where it was a smaller number, where it was like George could then take himself and like two other people. It's like, OK, well, now we're on clearly on the bottom.
Yeah.
OK, the other people that had to stay and vote, we're on the bottom. We've actually screwed ourselves by using this, where if he used it correctly and picked the right five allies, then they would have the numbers using this correctly. But it was a difficult thing to sort of like stick the landing. And George was especially bad at explaining why he did what he did, where he actually got in somehow into a seemingly worse position by using it. So that, you know, George misplaying it so much really ended up like, it had a lot of power, but it ended up like really hurting his position in the game. It just, to me, that it didn't come across as like super unfair, because that it didn't propel George into this position where then, OK, he's like now set up like really well in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that for me, like 90% of the lack of meaning was just like how overpowered it was. But then like it went to the full 100 with the way that George played it. And I think for me, like, it's just that Australian Survivor might have a bit of a reputation with the non-eliminations and some things in the past of just kind of being the most manufactured, maybe manipulated, whatever it is. Like, it might feel the least pure. And I think a twist like six people get to leave tribal council might sound like a parody someone might have said before the season. Like, how will it start? Well, someone will get to send six people out of tribal council is literally like a joke criticism I might have made. I mean, I've said it on the twist. In terms of how George played it, I do want to talk through it, because I think this is a really, really tough advantage to play. As much as it seems like you should be able to get your group together and you should get a majority, it's kind of counterintuitive, because you're getting six people, and if that's a really good cohesive group, they'd be better off in tribal council or voting together, surely, than sent back to camp. Like, you're only really saving one person, maybe someone who was like a secondary, who in this case was George. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he takes home four people who were not in any trouble. He didn't save them at all. He steals their vote from them. Like, this is a vote steal that he's done. He doesn't tell them about it beforehand, which is completely on him, because there's no risk. You're leaving tribal council. You might as well try and tell people and see how it goes. I do think this was not done in a good way. Like I said on Talking Tribal, you don't want to make people feel attacked. They didn't know what was happening to them. Like, they're completely out of control of their own fate. They literally have the word kidnapped. That's exactly what happened. For me as a control freak, I'd be thinking, what? No, like, I have a plan tonight. I have no way that I'm going home for the other four people that he took. You're taking my autonomy from me, my power from me, my vote. Like, you haven't even discussed this with me. Like, how is this happening to me, not with me? So I would agree with you that there's two ways to go about this. So you're talking about the strategy play. How do you get Mitch out, right? If that's really what you want to do. I wouldn't lean towards that. But maybe there's a way where you go to Mitch. Well, not to Mitch. You've got Mitch and you've got five other people. He has to take himself out and five other people. So you have to go to five others. You can't leave yourself in and say, hey, I have this advantage I have to play tonight, or I'm playing tonight. We're getting Mitch out. We together are getting Mitch out. Now, six people are going to leave. This is who it's going to be. We're telling everyone but Mitch. So it just is a vote on Mitch. You're not in any struggle here. Are you okay with this? I'm leaving you a tribal council, but you're not in danger. It's not a problem. You will keep your vote.
Yeah.
And Mitch will be the one unaware. I'm telling five of you, like, this is the plan. Now, again, this takes a lot of social capital. This takes a lot of relationships that I'm not sure George has. But as you said, I do think there's some strategy in there. If you just warn everyone except Mitch, worst case scenario, they tell Mitch, doesn't really matter. You've left tribal council anyway. And like, worst case scenario, he just doesn't go home, which is obviously what happened anyway.
Yeah. So I just think that there's like a lot of like intriguing ways that this like could work, because like just like running the numbers, like that if George just found four votes that could potentially
That's a lot of votes, though.
That is a lot of votes, because it's almost like it would be almost enough. It would be almost like
you can't count yourself. So it really is yourself, four
right.
other people.
So he'd have to find four other people. But still, that would have been in a normal vote that they would be down 7-5. So if he could find it's like, even if you left in, like, maybe you could do it with three and somebody who's sort of like wishy-washy, who wouldn't necessarily like be jumped to Mitch's side. So it does give some power to a group that would be in the minority,
but not a 10-2.
I'm just wondering, though, like, could this work better, or would you hate it more if it happened later in the season, like in a situation like, you know, where Winners at War, where Jeremy, say, hypothetically, could be, are we allowed to talk about U.S. Survivor on this podcast?
Yeah, please. Yeah, Survivor Global.
Where Jeremy had the advantage, where the safety without power, like what if you had the advantage like later on in the game where you could take four people out of a tribal council, you know, and yourself included, which I think is like an interesting part of it, to leave people there. Is that better or worse?
I mean, it's better because this. I'm not going back to the well on this. I'm not going back to LaRue with this. This is not the thing. But yes, like the three criticisms I had, if they were to make any of those better, it would improve it for me. As you said, make it later in the game. Give us more meaning. Mm-hmm. Give us relationships that people can be tied to rather than... Phil was still going off first impressions. Extremely unfair. Like, I really don't think... At that point, you're like, say something, but it really is at that point still feeling each other out. You really hold on to what you've had back at camp in those initial discussions. And then... We're back to first impressions with this like completely random vote. So yes, make it later in the game. And then I said it was immensely overpowered. So take fewer people out of tribal council. And then I said it was so late in the voting cycle. So do it after the immunity challenge. Take George, you know, you've just lost the immunity challenge. Take six people to another island. And then the six of you work it out back at camp. So like, yes, if any one of those decisions was made, to me, it would be better. But like, I don't want to workshop something that we should just like throw in the fire anyway. But yes. But like, in terms of the big strategic play for Mitch, I do think this was a tough one for George. And for, unless you really do have like a 5-7, unless those numbers work perfectly, a tough one in general. The way that I would use it, if I had to, if I was George, who's not in a good position, again, 99% of other people don't use this advantage. It clearly makes people mad. People want to vote at their first tribal council. But I would make it like a very, very social thing. If that's a strategic play trying to get Mitch out, I would not care who I get out, but let's make a group. You're coming back with 6 of 11. Again, important the messaging and important the timing. You never, ever just spring this on them at tribal council. What you're doing, you're going to them on that day and saying, hey, I have this advantage, and I've had to think to myself, like, who do I want to play this game with? I know I'm safe tonight. I'm waking up here tomorrow. I want to wake up here tomorrow with you. I don't want you to be gone. I don't want to leave you there and not know what's going to happen to you. So let's make this group, again, are you okay with it? Let's do it together. We're a collaboration. Then let's make it fun. You all come back to camp. Let's, like, let's give it a name. You know, you're the six who left. We're the leavers. We're the group. That's not a great group name, but I could come up with something better. If
leavers.
We got out of this. We did it together. Like, what a cool experience. Oh, they're having a late night at tribal council. Like, we've come back to camp. You've told them about it beforehand, and now you're a group of 6 of 11. Again, I think this is really hard. I think it needs immense social capital. I think it needs immense awareness of who would like this, who your closest connections are. Like, it's a tough one to play, but I do think, like, never ever take someone from tribal council against their will unless you're outright saving them like you did to Wei. These people want to vote. These people want control. These people don't want control ripped from their hands by Jonathan and George immediately before they vote.
Did George have to use it?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so there's like 9 different, I don't want to keep saying Wei, but there's like 9 different methods he could have gone that would have been better than what he actually did.
Yeah. I mean, you could also, I don't know. Yeah. Like, you could, I guess anyone else could be like, look, I have this, but like, I think that I don't want to take us out of tribal council. Like, I'm showing you the note. I do have this power. I don't want to have to be forced to use this. That might sound a little threatening. Maybe don't say it like that, but I don't want to have to be.
Yeah, he could leverage it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's keep us a tribal council, but let's really make it count as a group. There are other methods. There are other alternative pathways to this. I said pathway. There you go. The word Wei has been ruined for us as podcasters throughout the rest of the season, which is a difficult one. I think it's really, really tough to use. But then the messaging after the fact, now, Rob, you wouldn't have seen this, but there was a secret scene on Template, okay, which was them coming back to camp from tribal council, which was pretty hilarious. Like, we saw a lot of it the next day when he's talking and being like, I took you because you're weak. And they're like, well, who keeps saying these things? You know, like, and then it was basically that, but they come back to camp and he's like, he keeps going through them person by person. He's like, Baden, hurt knee, Rachel, old, like, you know, he's going through everything, way, like, weak, like, you know, he's going through and then he's like, well, Rachel's like, well, who said that? He's like, no one needs to say it. I just know. And she's like, well, you just said it. And he's like,
yeah,
I just know that people think you're old and weak. Like, yeah, and it was just not the messaging that people want.
It's wild that this man is a spin doctor. His his job is trying to come up with ways to say things that are palatable, like to say things.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, has offended all of these people that he tried to save by calling them like derogatory names, like old.
Yeah.
Weak.
Well, I think the thing with George and like
your strength challenged.
Yeah.
Like, how does that test?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, messaging is, I wanted to play the game with you. Didn't want you to go. It's quite an easy messaging.
You have wisdom of age.
He did say wise, I think. I think that's like the one kind of word that he worked in there. There are ways to make this really positive. I think it's hard because it is an antisocial advantage in many ways to steal four people's vote. Like, we have advantages that are vote steals, where you're actually attacking another group, and he did that. But then we have, you know, idols that save people, and he did do that to them technically, but they weren't in trouble. You just have to spin it, which again should be his job, to be like, I saved you. It's like, yeah, but you also stole my vote. No, but I also, let's forget about that, what I did. You're here, aren't you? I saved you. So they're not stupid. They know that they weren't going home, so it's a hard one to spin, but I think you really have to lean on that. And for George, I do think as well, like, I think if you were to go up to George and be like, I saved you because you're, like, really weak and bad in the game, he'd be like, thank you so much. You know, like, I don't think George cares about being seen as weak. I just think he should realize.
He's a truth teller.
Yeah, like, he's like, okay, fair enough. Like, yeah, that was really relevant and important that you did that. I just think he should realize other people don't like being called weak to their face.
Yeah.
Small criticism.
He's so compelling to watch in everything he does. Can I bring in Mitch to this, because he hates Mitch so much. Do you think, is Mitch doing a bad job as the leader of this tribe, or does George just despise him because he is the de facto leader of the tribe?
I mean, it does feel a little bit unfair, but then, so I was watching, they have like get to know the cast videos online. I'm going to quote Mitch about himself word for word. He says, I can be a little abrasive sometimes, that innate feeling you get as a human being when you meet someone else and just don't really like them. So from Mitch himself, he said that about himself. I mean, I just think, like, I don't know if it's Mitch doing anything wrong, but I guess he is at the head of the tribe that George is at the bottom of. So, like, that's not going to feel great. He's trying to send home Wayne, who's like, George is only the ally. George is also clearly on the outs. Like, you wouldn't like getting kind of told what to do by someone who is clearly against you, and you're now on the bottom of those dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, Shannon, that Mitch is Australian Dr. Marcus.
That's interesting. How, like, yeah, I mean, because they're both doctors. And
they're both doctors. They're both sort of like, you know, like they're
both
like in shape, but not like a super big guy. They're just sort of like they're tall. They're just sort of seen as the leader, that they seem like that they are like capable players, but not necessarily like, you know, great players at the game. Like, they're thrust into like the leadership position. Like, they have sort of like the same sort of like you know, a sort of bland but fine personality of like, they sort of like have like to me, I just feel like I watch them as like, oh, okay, for everybody that said Marcus got robbed, okay, this is the chance, let's run it back with Mitch.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I don't know, there's like a little bit of an edge to
he
Mitch.
Wears the yellow buff.
Yeah I mean, I see those connections. I just feel with Mitch, like, again, we only know him, much like all the brains, in, you know, in his connection to George. And George doesn't feel strongly about him. So I'm like, now I'm calling him Dictator Doctor. And I don't know if he is, but like, That's all I have to go on with you.
He seemed like indifferent to George. He did not. He's like, I didn't even know you didn't like me. I'm just shocked. I can't believe this.
Yeah, he's like, I had no idea. Like, cut to George's confessional. He's like, that is the worst man I have ever met. Because, like, no idea. But, like, he was pretty mad in that scene, in that secret scene where they come back from the tribal. Because then, like, the rest of the tribe comes back and they're, like, very unhappy. It's a great scene.
Yes. So that's a very fun dynamic of that George hates Mitch's guts and Mitch barely knows anything about George.
Yeah, what it is it's like Flanders and Homer Simpson, kind of. It's like, Mitch is like, hi to Leo, and George is like, you know, breathing fire at him. But I think now, like, I think since what George did at the first Tribal Council, I think it might be a bit more two-sided.
Yeah, now he dislikes. Now he actively dislikes him.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah. Do you think if the Brains tribe would have gone back to Tribal Council this week, that George would have gone home?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
they are so mad. Like, look, he left.
My guy needs an idol.
Yeah. He left five people in a tribal council against their will, took out all their options, and was like, I don't care if you live or die. Bye bye. Six people with Phil, but five people that are still there. And then he took, you know, five people back. Way's pretty grateful. And then the other four people he, like, you know, did insult. So, tough one. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a hard one because I think they said, like, it, you know, he seemed very self-interested. And I guess when you, again, don't warn them beforehand and you take them all out by your own wants and needs, yeah, that'll sound like you're doing it for yourself. Like, if you go to them beforehand, like, I think that really is the key to this. Again, okay, if I'm going to give my how to use this twist, well, God forbid they ever do it again. But if they do, 9 times out of 10, don't use it. If your game is in such a bad spot that you need to use it, it's going really poorly. I'm concerned for you. But if it is in that spot that you need to use it, by God, go to people beforehand. Make them feel like they're part of something rather than being kidnapped from their first tribal council. And I think we can, you know, leave it at that. But at least it gave us a lot to talk about, as you said. Like, we, you know, move on from it.
It gave us a lot to talk about. Like, I don't think it ruined the season. Like, I don't think it really, like, changed up. Like, it put anybody in such a great, if anything, it put George in, like, a much worse position.
And the fallout is really intriguing.
Right. And so, to me, I just feel like that, you know, like, are you ever going to find something that's, like, perfect, that's going to be fair to everybody? Probably not. I think if those things are out there, they're probably already thought of. So, that there's so many different ways he could have played it. I thought it brought a lot to the show.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely like a big TV moment. Again, I'd rather my TV, like, because, like, last year in All Stars, which we also recapped the first week, their big TV moment was that they had, like, the champions of the challenge, which was Matt Rogers and Henry, go out to get the idol. The idol was at Tribal Council and only one person could get it. So now they're, like, throwing challenges and then it had to be used in the first three, which led to this, like, huge moment where they passed the idol across tribes and then Daisy got idled out and David was part of it. Incredible moment. Like, it worked so well and it was, like, this huge first week moment. Like, I'm like, why didn't they do that exact thing again? I loved every part of that. And it was within the realms of the game that we understand. And it was incredible TV. This was just like, I hate to go on about it so much, but I truly feel that, like, they sat around a boardroom saying, like, what would really kind of grab attention episode one? And they're like, all right, half the tribe just gets up and leaves. Just six people just get out of there, you know? And they're like, yes.
Go on.
Half of them, you know, I don't know. It just felt lazy compared to, like, the intricacy of the Henry idol last time. It's beautiful, beautiful twist. Anyway, we've ranted. I see your point. Mm-hmm. I disagree.
And I see yours as well. Yeah. This was a wonderful debate.
Okay.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, more about brains before we move on to Braun, because as I said, I felt burnt by the first episode, but I do agree, my favorite thing about the twist is that we can never talk about it again, forget that it ever existed, try and do that, you know, RIP Phil, but at least it's not like an Edge of Extinction that ruins the whole season, like, we move forward.
Yeah.
And we, you know, have some fun this week. But before we do with the brains trap, I really loved both Wei and George getting their challenge moments in the second and third episode, where they win it for the team and like they were underestimated. And I think that's like a really fun part of like some of these challenges and the theme where, you know, you can have your like comeback story and like the narrative writes itself.
Yeah, I think that the challenges have been a little hit or miss. Like, I feel like a couple of the challenges have been like very brawny with like not really that much of a brains element to it. But I think that the challenges that have really worked so far in the season are the challenges where, yeah, there is a strength element, but like if you really like come up with the right strategy, that it would be a bigger advantage for you. And I think that they tried to do that with them in the first challenge. And it was embarrassing for this brains tribe that they could not solve that slide puzzle. Could you have solved that, Shannon?
I mean, I'm not like a big slide puzzle person. Like there are other things, like I think all of the other puzzles, that's for me, like the one where they have to do the letters. I've been playing a lot of this. It's like a water game. And you're like, if anyone knows what I'm talking about, like there's lots of different jugs with different color water. And you have to like get all the same color water in a jug. And like, it's very similar to that. And like the thing that
is like on a device.
Yeah, it's just like on your phone. Like, it's just like unthinking. But like the thing about that, that I think might have like somewhat translated that they were kind of doing with the brains tribe was like, you want to have like a whole arm basically clear so that you can kind of use it as like your travel arm. And then like the brain teaser that George did, I feel like I'd be really good at that because like my secret skill is I'm like incredible at untangling slinkies. It's really rad. Like my brother tangles a lot of slinkies.
are getting tangled. Yeah.
Like, no, I'll come back to Sydney. My brother will be like, here are five slinkies that I tangled. And I'll untangle
Why
them.
Does Jason have five slinkies?
We have, every time we go to the arcade, we get slinkies. We have like endless slinkies. I don't know how to explain
it. Oh, little
it.
Ones.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we're very like a slinky focused family. And I will come and like save the slinky. So like true, like I spoke to Jason last night. I'm like, I would have been good at that challenge. He's like, yeah, like a slinky. I feel like I'm really, really showing us to be strange.
See, you said, oh, I'm not a champion at anything. I could be on Survivor.
World champion slinky untagler. Is that a thing that exists? Because I want to go for it.
Yeah. That could be your intro package of like, hi, my name is Shannon. And people don't know are unassuming about me. But what they don't know is that I have a secret power.
Yeah.
I can untangle slinkies.
My secret power. Yeah. And the first challenge will be a
like
slinky
Survivor.
Untangling challenge. You know, like wood chopping, but like just a giant slinky. And I'm like, all right, go under. No, you got to go around. Because the thing about untangling slinkies is, before it's free, it look, you know, it's kind of like how surgery looks like murder halfway through. Like before it's three, every single time Jason's like, you've made it worse. I'm like, I absolutely have not. I don't know why I'm talking about slinky untangling at length right now, but there is an art to it.
Never thought about surgery looks like murder halfway through.
I think that's a quote. I don't think I made that up. but I would agree on the challenges. Like some of them are beautifully done. Like the fact that the brain teaser was at like the beginning of the challenge. So it wasn't like the natural come from behind one. Now it was like, could Braun catch up, was really fun and exciting. But then some are just like, and now we wrestle, you know, like got to, you know, we're not wrestling and then doing a puzzle. Like we're just wrestling right now.
Yeah, and it was not like that one with the one where Emmett was showboating. That challenge was just there was like a part where was there a strategy to get through the rope crawl before you got to the bag? Maybe there was a strategy of who to put into the challenge.
Yeah.
George was saying that he mm-hmm. had but the thing about George is that he always says that he has the perfect plan.
But then he was right, and that was satisfying.
Then he was right.
Yeah.
He was right. He did not have the perfect plan to use leave of tribal council with six people. But, then he did that last immunity challenge with the ring. That was amazing. That was one of the coolest things I've seen on Survivor, where it's classic, I can solve this. I can solve this. Yeah. Put this in. And he comes in and he did it.
I know. It was a beautiful moment because he's saying it and no one's listening. And then Baden is like, it's only when Baden is like, guys, I think he actually has it. And then they're like, all right, Baden, now that you've said it, then he runs in and gets it. Incredible, amazing moment. I think other challenges, Brain have won no reward, but they're winning now in the immunity challenges. So at least they're keeping the puzzles where it matters. But even the reward challenge for the Bickies, which was the, the shoulder the load challenge with the weight, I thought actual shoulder the load would have been better because, that's the old school challenge where, yes, there's the brawn and you probably will win on brawn just by holding it up. But then there is some amount of strategy that is around, who gets the weight. So that at least mm-hmm. is a brainy thing, surely, because you're choosing who gets what weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hits and misses, but is anyone else really standing out to you on the Brain Tribe? As you said, it's a really difficult one when it's all quite George focused.
So the thing that I was saying, there's a couple of them. The thing that I was saying, the three episodes in, it was such a big storyline on the Brawn Tribe. We have no fire. We have mm-hmm. no fire. And the Brawn Tribe was dying. They had no fire. And I was saying to myself, oh, did Brains get a flint somewhere along the way? Why haven't we seen anything about the Brain Tribe and trying mm-hmm. to make fire? And then all of a sudden in the third episode, it's day six. We still don't have a fire. And then George is talking about look, we need to rest. OK.
Yeah.
And Andrew's like, well, and we got his intro package and he's like, all right, I'm going to make the fire. Andrew, where have you been for 6 days?
Well, Andrew is a world-famous survival expert.
What is going on?
Yeah. Look, I can't explain to you why the editing didn't show the fire until then. Firstly, the Brains did have bigger problems. They were George.
Yes.
And also,
you feel like they had the fire on day two?
No, I didn't think they had it. I just know why it wasn't mentioned until day six when it was a whole Brawn storyline. The reason was because George wasn't talking about it. Was the fire about George?
George has to talk about the fire.
Exactly. Then it comes to exist. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Once George says, hey, I don't think we should make the fire, time to make the fire, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
George doesn't want this.
No, but also from an editing perspective, yes, they could have a non-George storyline, which is everyone struggling without fire, but then we wouldn't be talking about George. Brawn has some room and some time to talk about how they don't have fire. It was obviously a big storyline because Simon had chosen not to take fire because he promised he could get them fire and then he couldn't. So there was some social reasons to that as well. But the Brains Tribe is not going to talk about anything until it's George relevant. So that's why we finally found out about it.
But it was day six. If Andrew is this guy, wouldn't you think that they get to the, hey, everybody, I'm a, world famous survivalist guy. I can make the fire. Please, Andrew, make the fire. Well, how did this not come up for 6 days?
Yeah, I don't think that Andrew should show this to potential employers. I think that
he's busy.
He's
busy.
Yeah, it's not a great showing for a survival expert, for sure. I also thought the one other thing with Brains that was funny was that it was just to me, I said this on Twitter, but quite an obvious, again, jock nerd contingent. And mm-hmm. I was like, you are the Brains Tribe. Why mm-hmm. are there cool brains? We all agreed we'd be uncool together, but most of you seem pretty cool. I think it might be an Australian Survivor thing. And then poor Wei and George are still the outcasts. Imagine being the outcast on Brains.
It's finally, my people.
Yeah, no.
No. You're still the outcast.
Yeah.
Can I talk about Kara also?
Yes.
So Kara, who got nothing in three episodes.
Well, in the secret scene, she was called old. So, yeah.
They called her old.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. So... Yeah. I have to say that I am looking at the, you sent me a Survivor like poster.
Sweet.
Of like,
yes.
Who all the pictures are of people. Yeah. And I have it open, and I have to say that I'm looking at the thing. And so they have the person's name, and they have the age, and then they have where they're from. And for all the people from Queensland, mm-hmm. I can't help but think that says old. And I'm looking at Rachel, 50, old. I'm like, rude.
George wrote it. There you go. She's like, who said it? He's like, it was on that poster. I thought it said old. Yeah. My eyesight's not great. Sorry. You're from Queensland? That's
Georgia,
what it is. Yeah.
55, old. Yeah.
For our international listeners, Queensland's like state code is QLD, so that's why.
Yes. Yeah, okay. But the Q has like a very, it's a very, like the, okay. The print is tiny, and the, right. The little thing on the Q is minuscule. Mm. Janelle, 43, old. See, that's wow. Where they got these ideas from.
Old people, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, that Kara, that we got, I think that was one of like the very first packages that we got, and we got to see that she's a real estate owner, but she also mm-hmm. has a superpower. Everybody has a superpower on Australian Survivor, and her superpower is that she is an empath. She could hold your hand, and she can get like some sort of like emotional reading from you. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is amazing. I have long wanted somebody with some sort of like ESP to be on Survivor. The closest we got was Caitlin on Big Brother US. And I really was so excited to see this in action. And like, how is this going to work? Is she going to like sit down with somebody and then have to like, okay, let's hold hands while we sit there. But then she didn't get anything the whole three episodes.
Yeah, I feel like she should have been like, guys, George is about to do something weird. Something weird is about to happen.
She has to hold his hand.
Yeah, okay.
She has to hold his hand. But Shannon, isn't that intriguing?
Yes. Mike and I, this was mentioned in the preseason, and Mike and I did roast it a lot. I did have a listener reach out and say that, like, she can do it too, and it's a thing. I said, I had Googled it. Look, I am a renowned skeptic. I don't believe in anything at all. So
I want to believe.
Okay. And I want to believe too. I, you know, in general,
shout out
kind
to
of fine.
Mike and Angela, the ex Bloom Plus Files.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, Mike also was like, you know, pretty incredulous about this. And I'm going to remain incredulous until I see it, like, literally in action. Because again, I don't believe in anything at all, but if Kara can make me
except
believe,
Survivor.
Yeah, I don't believe in anything I can't physically see. That's like a, you know, touch or know or, you know, that I'm experiencing. That's just the thing about me. So yeah, if Kara does it in front of my eyes, I'll be impressed, but I'm, you know, willing to see it happen. Should
I want
to
see it.
The Braun tribe 1 hour into this podcast? Should we, you know? Yes, because they went to two tribal councils. I think they're the more compelling tribe, at least from what we've seen so far, just literally because we got more content.
Yes.
Who's standing out
Brains
for you
is
here?
Top heavy that they have George, but that they probably have a deeper bench over on the Braun tribe.
Yeah, we know more than one person and people that are connected to that person. Who's standing out for you, though?
Okay, well, a lot of them. I really like this group. Even the people that like are, I guess I'm like, I'm supposed to not like, I guess in like Simon and Emmett, like I feel like that they have brought, like I was very happy to see it was Gavin, who I'm sure is a lovely guy, be the person voted out, because I thought he was by far the most boring out of those three guys.
Poor Gavin. I mean, like, what this game does to people who are not just AFL players. That's not
a great
it.
Look. Yeah, not like, a good episode for our guy Gavin.
Like, the way that this game reduces true legends of AFL to the point where this accomplished, like, he's a giant of AFL. He's literally not a giant. That is a different team. But he is, like, just Hall of Fame worthy, has a stand named after him at a stadium level, and it reduces him to like, this game is so confusing. Oh,
like,
it's
oh,
just
we were
too
voting
much
for,
going on. Like,
I thought we were voting for Janelle.
Yeah, like those trio of boys, I'm definitely like intrigued by Simon. Like, he's, you know, giving the most. He's, you know, for better or worse, you decide. But like, he's definitely putting himself out there. Said he can make the fire. Like, truly the leader. He has voted incorrectly two times, but he's, you know, trying his best. Emmett,
yes,
the copper god. gotta say it, you know, like trying to be the golden god, trying to be Dave, and it's not Dave. It's probably the kind of thing that I can say about
that. He's
not
Dave. Yeah, no. He's got the scarf going, you know, trying to bring that back. But I think that he is like so cocky and like is just bringing like sort of like cartoony bad guy energy
yes.
to the season.
He
and
is
so,
a cartoony bad guy.
I love it. Like that he is like, you know, a Disney villain in that he is like such a narcissist that he referred to his body as the Mona Lisa.
He said a lot of things that I've repressed. Yeah.
He had, you know, his video package. Okay. His package was when we got it, he like gave us like, okay. And he's like, I do this, but I have a superpower. I'm like, okay, go on.
Another one. Yeah.
He's like, I only eat plants. Like, that's the superpower?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a vegetarian too. I don't feel like I'm like that, but I don't, you know, I'm not on a plant-based diet. I think that's different.
His superpower was his plant-based diet.
Yeah, that's not a thing. Like, okay. That sounds like what someone might say to me in like a multi-level marketing scheme. You know, like, do you want a superpower? Plant-based diet.
Is this a commercial for vegetables?
Yeah, and it's not the
Vegemite.
Kind of like, I don't like getting sold to on that. Like, I usually do, but not on this. Look, Emmett, I have here. Emmett is certainly a character. I'm trying to be really positive and kind this season. So that's why I haven't tweeted about Emmett.
Would I want to hang out with the guy? Probably not. But I mean, my criteria for these shows are you boring or are you interesting?
I mean,
he's interesting.
Look, Gavin felt a little outpaced in the game. I wanted to see a little more from Gavin. He really is like a real AFL legend. He's got like a very accomplished life. Like, I was interested to see more.
No doubt.
Simon, I didn't want to lose Simon. Like, Simon, I think, can give us more. Emmett, I'm like, you know, the downfall already would have been pretty sweet. Is he going to give us more than this? Or is it going to be like more? And like, is it going to be just this over and over again? Because then I'm done. Is he going to build on that in any capacity? I don't feel great about that. Like, I don't think he is.
No.
So how much
but
of that
not
do you
gonna
stomach?
Win, right?
Yeah, but like we're going to take this every episode for the next, like, you know, until he's like the inevitable goat. Like, it's quite annoying.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think somebody's going to drag him to the end? Like, I think eventually he'll have like a big downfall.
Yeah. It could have been last night. Like, you could have had that downfall
last night.
Yeah, it would have been fun.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we have fun with that?
Yes. So I was so relieved. I mean, that one, like, with all due respect to Janelle, I was very happy that Shannon got to stay over Janelle. And then I was so happy then when the women said, okay, the three guys, we got to break that up. And we're going for Gavin. I was like, whew. Okay.
Fair enough.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, look, I see that. Poor Janelle. Like, we talked about this preseason, only contender on the entire tribe. Like, only person who was just a regular human. And they were like, we're not about that here. Like, complete fodder, I think, for the tribe. It was quite unfair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, Janelle, she didn't. She really didn't like how cocky Emmett was.
Who does? Who could blame her?
She's relatable.
She was the voice of the people. Like, she was making a lot of sense. It was kind of annoying how she was being spoken to at the tribal council, like, really being spoken down to. And they expected to go back to camp with her, which is kind of amazing. But where do you sit on, like, was this the right move to take out Janelle? For the girls, like, you know, entertainment aside, they could have taken the shot at Emmett. That's what Janelle's trying to do. We'll talk about how possible it could have been, but, like, in a perfect world where Flick has all the information of this tribe, she knows the boys are going against Shannon, her ally. Should she, like, really make the move here, which she does end up doing the next day, to, like, go for the boys immediately, keep someone like Janelle on side?
Yeah, I don't know necessarily, like, if they had the buy-in to potentially vote out Emmett, because how many votes did they have? 6 or 7?
It ended up being 7-4-1, but Gavin's was an accident, so 6-5-1. Yeah, then that 6 ends up voting together the next night, 6-5. So that became the majority.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, we didn't get to see, like, a couple of people that were involved in the vote, like Benny, who are you?
We have,
no idea what he thinks about anything.
Which is funny,
Gerald?
Because before the season, in the preseason coverage, we were like, we were really confused about Benny because he's got like a really limited online presence. Like there's stuff there, but it leads to like broken links. And then Mike called him Booney, and like he is kind of, yeah. And he kind of like, it still holds up like 1 week into the show, like 3.5 hours in, like Booney.
Booney, who are you? Like Gerald, we didn't really see too much of what he wanted to do going into that vote. So
yeah.
I don't know. I just think that there might have been other like oh no, I can't like you know keep Emmett for whatever reason.
I do see that, like, because on Talking Tribal, I said, like, in a perfect world, like, keep Janelle, because then the next day they go to Tribal Council, they're then, like, incredibly reliant on Dainey, who did honestly seem to be tossing it up. They waste an idol, which would seem like really fair play because Dainey was tossing it up. It felt like it could have been, like, a stronger group had you made that move earlier with, like, a larger majority, but I do want to say, like, I don't know that they had that power. We do see, like, a lot of talk about kind of like unity and keeping the tribe strong. And I think particularly for like Gerald talking, like, you know, there's like one really short scene where he's talking about like keeping the tribe a bit strong. Obviously Dainey's leading the charge against Janelle. So I don't know if there's a majority right there to vote out Emmett. I think, you know, everyone's thinking like first vote, let's vote out the one person who's not a brawn. Like every one of us is like one thing and Janelle is a regular person. I say that with love as a regular person, but it just maybe felt like the easy vote for someone like
you're Slink. No regular person.
No. Like it's fine to be regular. Like not all of us are world champion slinky untanglers. I am.
It's true.
But not everyone is. But like I see that, you know, for someone like Flick who's in the middle, you know, try and you could maybe go back and like work with the boys if there's a swap or you don't lose again. Like there's some sort of unity to just like getting rid of the weakest. You are brawn after all. Like I do really see that. I just think it's unfortunate that by the end of the week, they're already having to take a shot at the boys. And it was just a little bit more dicey to the expense of an idol because you didn't take that shot a little bit earlier. But I'm just not sure it was a possibility for them.
Yeah. Can we talk about the idol play in the third tribal council?
Oh,
we're not there
it.
Yet.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Let's talk about it.
So my question, and you know, this might just be sort of like tinfoil Phil's hat conspiracy stuff, but do you have any sort of a sense of like Big D? I know you said that he was like a true like toss up going into that tribal council. But do you think that he potentially when he goes to the group with the guys and Danny and Chelsea? Those are the two women that are voting with the three guys.
The strong group, yes.
With the strong group. Mm-hmm. And that he says, okay, put the vote on Kez for that tribal council. Did he run back to the group and tell them who the vote was going to be on, do you think?
Well, Gavin Wanganeen, you know, he's obviously on the wrong side of the vote, but I did have an exit interview with him today where he did say that, like, Dainey was playing, like, a double agent and did bring that information back. I don't know if he's, like, again, the most, like, reliable narrator on that, but I do think it is possible. My question is, if you are Kez and Dainey is the person you're getting your information from and he says the vote's going to be on Kez, why would you play the idol on yourself? Because either, you know, he's with you, in which case you have a majority, or he's not with you, in which case the idol needs to be played, but, like, he also might be lying to you because he's not with you. So if that was their information, it's a little bit flawed.
Yeah.
But I still think it was fine to play the idol because I do think he was actually tossing up. I just think, like, for me, I think it got a little lucky. Like, the way it was presented to us was that Dainey makes it Kez's name for no other reason than to just say, I can. Like, I just want to know that you'll change. I just want to kind of know where I stand, which was really cool to watch, actually. It's just funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kez just plays it on herself because, like, yeah, you should be safe and prioritize yourself to tribal councils into this. Like, it seemed more situational than connected, but, like, possibly there was some information given.
Yeah. And just for the record, she didn't need to play the idol. Yeah. There were six votes for for Gavin.
Fair. Surely.
Yes. Yes. No, it's a little bit. But like when they do this on the episode, it makes it feel like to the viewer at home, it makes it seem like, OK, this was a correct idol play.
Yes.
Like in Millennials versus Gen X that I watched last week, where Will Wall actually voted with Hannah, but Adam Klein played his idol and then ultimately Will Wall got them to burn an idol at that tribal council. I mean, are we giving too much agency to say, did Big D know that Kez had an idol?
I mean, we'd be taking a lot from that. I don't think it's something that we necessarily knew. For me, it does seem just situational. And it seems like it all makes sense to me of kind of how it happened. Because we saw Danny say that he just wants the power of saying, like, will you change? And then, like, for someone like Kev to play the idol, like, it's funny because other than Gavin voting incorrectly, like, the same group voted, but other than Janelle, who voted, like, by herself, and say Gavin voted correctly, it was the same 6-5 both times. But it does seem to me like this majority really formed in the third episode because the girls are like, we have me, Shannon, and Kev, like, we're in alliance, and we just need to pull in. They say, they use the words pull in, Benny, Gerald, and Danny. So, like, while they might have worked together, again, this also makes it seem more like why they had to go for Janelle, why they might have, like, worked together on a maybe more of a consensus vote. I think that's there's a difference between, like, an easy consensus and, like, a strong, structured group or majority, and I think they only formed that in the third episode. So I totally get why Kez, even though she had just voted correctly in the last episode, I totally understand why she's, like, wanting to play her idol, because I don't know that this was, like, such a fully formed group. Now they are together, now the six has voted together, and they're, like, clearly a group, but I think this was, like, really that vote where they did that.
Yeah. It was a very exciting third vote, and, you know, good on her for playing the idol. It was very fun to watch her find the idol. Mm-hmm. And then I can't recall like too many other times like in Survivor where we've made such a meal out of, OK, I have the idol. Now, where do I put it?
Yeah. Oh, I love this whole sequence. And we've had comments about, you know, how it's kind of unfair the way, like, yes, women have to dress on the show. And this is something that's been spoken about at length by, like, female contestants. Kelly Wentworth has been brought up, which is great because people are calling Kezzy Wentworth, so it works out. But, like, when had to find the idol in the Cambodia premiere at the challenge, like, it was a swimming challenge, and she had to, like, give all sorts of excuses of why she'd be wearing shorts, because usually she'd just wear a bikini. Like, she's not like a guy who can wear, like, big board shorts with pockets. So it makes it really difficult. And, like, the fact that she would, like, put her body on the line, Kev, lying out there in, like, the hot Australian sun with, like, no way to get this idol back. Like, I love the whole thing. I love that there was an actual clue to an idol in front of people. Like, what a fun idol-finding sequence.
Yeah. And, you know, we've seen other survivors like Kelly Kim, like hide the idol.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, it definitely in her hair, right? Like, that's the go. That's the one thing we have.
Mm-hmm.
Nature's pocket hair.
Maybe she hadn't seen Island of the Idols, or maybe she heard it wasn't great and didn't skip that one on the binge.
That's like episode two, though. She should have really checked it out. Anyway, for the future.
What did you think of the actual idol? It looked like it was like an amulet.
Yeah, I mean, it's very shiny. I like the whole thing. I like that she pulled in Flick with it. Like, I think that this trio of girls, Flick, my winner pick, Shannon, Mike's winner pick, those are my three. I said, I'm like, Kez, Shannon, and Flick are the three people I'm deciding between as my winner picks. I think they're, like, absolutely killing it. They're calling them the Australian Witches Coven.
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really fun group. You know, Gerald is a big personality with them. I really like Big D. I like calling him Big D because there's also a Big D on Big Brother also.
Yes.
Isn't that fun when, like, there's two shows on at the same time and people have the same name?
Yeah, that's really easy for you to keep track of, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I think it makes for, like, a lot of, like, fun. I know you're not following the U.S.
No, but I did get
tweets
because I said something. I'm like, Big D must be protected at all costs because I love Danny. He's, like, my favorite.
And he is not as popular as
Okay, because I got responses about Big Brother and I just ignored them.
Right.
I was quite
It'll
confused.
Be interesting to see who lasts longer this summer. Which Big D goes further in the game?
Okay, let's see. Battle of the Big Ds. That's what we're doing right now. That's, like, something that is happening. I really love Danny. I love this whole episode. That's what I wanted to say. Like, again, burned by the first episode. Second episode, characters emerging. Bit of an easy vote. Still having fun with it. You know, cool, like, win by way in the brains. Third episode, I was like, this is, like, perfect early game Survivor. You've got the cool, awesome brain teaser, slinky challenge win from George, which I loved. You've got the idol find, which was so fun. You've got, like, this huge divide, which I really think for Australian Survivor, like, the best thing about it is they have these huge tribes. And we often talk about how, like, it feels like a merge early on. Like, 2017, Summertale was like that. 2019, the champions were like that, where it's just, like, it's kind of too big a group to really spend a long time just picking off, like, the bottom feeders. Like, you really kind of fracture at a point, and, like, Braun already have done it. I felt that was really fun. I felt that Danny was, like, a really clear, very likable swing vote. and you had like the question of which side is he going, and it seemed like, you know, really contentious, but also like you could really follow it from like a casual audience perspective. And then beyond that, you had like Will Kes play the idol. Idol Find was so fun. Like every part of this, I was like, this is really clear drama, really high stakes, like follow it easily, but like so entertaining.
Shannon, if you're excited, imagine being me and actually liking the twist in the first episode.
Yeah, think you must about have how loved excited this I am. Because they had to bring me back. I was like down in the depths. I'm like, oh God. I think a lot of people, like, I saw people tapping out on the first episode. I almost can't blame them. But like the third episode, we're back. Like it's a fast cycle. And, you know, I have a bit of whiplash from it, but I'm like now all in. So that's fun.
Yeah.
So, I'm not angry anymore.
I thought this was such a great week for Australian Survivor.
Clearly, you don't have any complaints. I have massive complaints, and I'm still having fun.
Yeah, I think my biggest complaint was like I thought the second tribal council was like kind of a snooze for overall. But I mean, that's fine.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, a couple of other questions. Danny yes. as the swing vote, Big D. Big D swinging. So many tweets about it. Swinging Big D. I'm going to get to the JLP tweets. Did you like which way he went on the vote as a swing vote?
So I just wonder, did he overplay this?
It was quite transparent. Yes.
Yeah, to both sides, where as he hurt his position, where he sort of like was like last one in, like first one fired type of situation for like both groups. So I'm a little worried about like his tenuous position in the group. Like, I don't think he's going anywhere. He's a big, strong guy. I think they're going to need him in the challenges, but like, I don't necessarily love his position right now, and especially the fact that when he told them to, like, hey, put the votes on Kes,
yeah.
that, you know, the thing that I had asked, like, is it possible that he got the vote? Like, I want, if you're like Emmett and Simon and the other Danny and Chelsea, like, are they starting to say, like, did you tell us to vote for yeah. Kes because you knew she was going to play the idol?
Well, I would definitely be like, wait, why did you tell us to change our vote and not even vote for us? And then he'd just be like, because I can. I'm Big D. Like, that
yes,
might have been.
I wanted to see if I could do it.
Yeah, exactly. Incredible television, like, maybe a bit aggressive as the play. Like, I don't think he's, like, last in for the alliance he's actually in, though. Like, I feel like he's just a part of that six. Like, he was clearly last into the strong alliance. How crazy that he's not necessarily in the strong alliance. Have you seen the guy? But also, like, Simon literally is like, you came late to this, so we're, like, you know, going to go with your vote. I think, like, he went with his connections. Like, I think he's a part of that six. Maybe was a little transparent. They might be, like, a little upset that, like, his wishy-washiness made them burn an idol, if they blame him on that. So, like, yeah, possibly a little bit too much time spent in the voting booth, a little bit too unsure. But the fact that, like, both sides wanted him, I think, was really good. And I like the side that he went with, both for, like, me as a viewer and also just for, like,
yeah.
it seemed like a strength versus, like, connections battle in his mind. And, like, in what world are you ever voting on strength? Like, you are Braun. You will win anyway. You are Danny. You will win on strength by yourself.
Does Big D have a catchphrase?
Spicy. Get it a little bit spicy. Yeah. Because it's actually funny because I'm currently listening to the podcast you did on Survivor catchphrases, and I definitely think like this should be entered into it. Because he said it twice, and it's been three episodes.
Yeah, and so this past year on Big Brother Canada, there was a contestant, Victoria, who was Spicy V, and she would talk about how things were getting spicy, and she was going to spice things up, so we might have Spicy D.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving Danny. Like, he has a really good video on the website about just like a bit more information on him, and he's just like the gentle giant kind of thing, but not like, I asked Gavin, like, why did you really think that Danny was voting with you? He was like, Danny and I had like such a good relationship. Like, we would talk on the beach and laugh so hard, we were crying. Like, I never thought that he would vote against me, basically. And I was like, that's really kind of amazingly done. And then also in his online video, he's like, yeah, like, I'll act really nice to your face and then I'll like chop your head off kind of thing. And I was like, wow, he literally did that. There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And then for the girls voting out Gavin, I know you liked it because you want Emmett around, you want Simon around. Like, for me, I thought, like, this is not the move, surely. Like, the reason we want him, or you might want him to go as a TV character, is because he's the least threatening. Like, in what world are you not chopping off the head of the snake, someone like Simon, or like Shannon talks about how Emmett and Gavin had a bromance. Like, surely one of those two is like so much more of a nuisance to you than like poor sweet Gavin who've just voted incorrectly.
I wonder if it could have been like an age thing in that Gavin, who's 40, looks great, by the way,
ex-AFL legend.
48. But I wonder,
is he from Queensland? Is he old?
I don't know. He's not from Queensland.
He's not from Queensland, I know. He's also not old. Man is 48.
Yeah, but maybe is he giving like kind of like dad vibes, and where maybe Simon and Emmett are sort of like able to like vibe a little bit more with some of the younger people in the tribe, where maybe Gavin is like kind of like a little bit more of like a social outcast. He's also like probably like a person of means, considering like the career he has. Like maybe he's just like a little bit more like disconnected. No, not necessarily. No, I'm saying like
they're all of means. These are all people who get dressed every day, Rob. Every single day they get dressed.
You know, he's sort of like a wealthy former athlete. Like maybe it's just not necessarily like a personality fit where like he gets along with some of these like people in their like late 20s, early 30s that are not necessarily like super successful people.
No, they are also successful, except Janelle. Like that's why Janelle got sent home, is because she wasn't successful enough. They don't just vote out Gavin because he's then like, what is this? Like we go to either end? No, like the reason they gave us was they were like, then we'll keep more challenge strength. But like this to me makes no sense because you are Braun. Like if it is going to be based on pure strength, like you don't need Simon. You have Danny. Why is someone talking about like Danny is massive. Like you'd still have Emmett. You still have Kez. Has anyone seen Kez? Like what? She's a bodybuilder. You'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like I they're keeping Simon and Emmett for strength when they are like the world's strongest tribe. Like they're literally like champion Braun. Get rid of, like, strategic threats. Keep in, again, an ex-AFL player. I guarantee you will be okay. I guarantee you will still win the strength-based challenges. When it comes to a puzzle, you're screwed anyway. So, like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just thought, I don't know. Why, like, Braun's still voting on strength? Is that the level we're at? I'm trying to imagine myself in this tribe where it's like, let's vote out the weak person. Let's vote out the AFL player.
Well, what was Simon's motive for wanting to get rid of Shannon so badly? Was because she wasn't good enough in the challenges?
No, I think it was that she was like, for a split second, considering like a girls thing against Emmett. Girls' alliance is a curse, by the way. Like, we must hear about them, but they'll never come to fruition. The second that they said girls' alliance, I was like, ah, one of these women is gone.
Look, Flick and Shannon and Kez have something going.
That is true, but it is an alliance that is like 50% women and 50% men. Like, it's not a girl's alliance.
Yeah, but it
alliance.
Seems like coven. That they are at the top of it.
That is true. I mean, that is like, I guess, some small solace in like an already failed girls' alliance. They see Shannon as like the head of the snake. Like, I actually think, like, good on them for trying to take out the head of the snake. Like, why aren't you guys doing that? Like, take out Simon.
Like, isn't it enough to have like an alliance of like the women are running things and they have a couple of men on the bottom as pawns? Can't we be pawns in the women's alliance?
It's just when it gets suggested, like what Janelle said was like, let's take out a guy and just get a women's majority. And they couldn't even do that. And now they're back at 5-5. I do think it is quite funny that like they've kept Emmett and Simon as like workhorses, you know, to be good at the challenge. They voted incorrectly 2 out of 2 times. They're like, you have no agency here, but you work for us now. I do find that kind of funny.
In fairness to Emmett and Simon, at least they voted for the person that was supposed to go home, as opposed to Gavin, who didn't even vote for the right person.
No, I said to Gavin, you accidentally voted right. Surely that's a good thing. Like, he voted for Janelle to go home. I was like, you know, like, the stats are going to look favorably on that for the rest of time.
I guess so.
So, yeah. Also hilarious, I asked Gavin, I'm like, did you never tell them that you voted? You never let them know that you voted incorrectly? He was like, I didn't. It's funny to me.
Yeah, you said they didn't need to know.
Yeah, this is like very big, like, Penna energy. Are you currently, you just watched Philippines, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So Penna did the same thing, accidentally voted and Jeff Kent got sent home. This didn't make or break the vote because Flick did decide it ultimately, but so, pretty funny.
Yeah. That Penner voted for Abby Maria, and then so he didn't accidentally vote for the person who actually did go home. He actually,
he screwed Jeff
voted
Kent.
For, yeah, he yeah. said, they're like, why did you vote for Abby Maria? He's like, I got PO'd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my mind, like, Penna and Gavin have the exact same confessional coming back from that, where they're like, oh, like, my bad. Like, accidentally voting must be, like, really confusing You're like, yeah, because, you know, like, voting is quite like a thing to do. You go to tribal council, you walk up the thing, put pen to paper, like quite a lot is going on. Most people know what they're meant to do. But look, Gavin has other enormous talents. So who are we to criticize?
Can he untangle a slinky?
Not as well as me, that I can assure you. No one can. I'll take anyone on a slinky untangling. It's an art form. It actually, you have to be able to see like three moves ahead. It's like chess in many ways, but it's slinky untangling. So, yeah.
I would love to hear JLP narrate you untangling a slinky.
This challenge was very similar to it, the brain teaser. Like, mm-hmm. I really do believe that. Anyway,
And George could be like, no, but I can do it. I can do it.
Yeah.
Shannon, let me have a turn.
And I won't listen until Baden tells me he's right. Because that's mm-hmm. how it goes. No, but I think that the Brawn tribe is very fun. It's very, very split. I still think these guys are getting kept around because strength seems to be so important. Like, if I'm Chelsea and Danny, who are, again, so strong, but, you know, Gavin Wanganeen just got voted off for being weak, like, I'd be a little concerned if I was them because I think that might be more of the way to go in the future.
Can I give you a pet peeve about Danny? Not Big D. Danny.
Yes.
So we got her intro package like very early on.
Yep.
Yes. And she's a corrections officer.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tells us that like, I'm so tough. I take no prisoners. But she's a corrections officer.
She takes all the prisoners.
She literally does take prisoners.
Yeah.
Like that's the opposite of what you do, ma'am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like
you. You can't be a corrections officer. I take no prisoners.
Yeah, that's like you. I'm saying I don't talk on a podcast. Like, that's literally your job. Yeah, like, that, it's the same. Like, I don't untangle slinkies. Like, I do. That's what I, like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think I know what she's trying to go for here,
no,
but
I get what,
you are
you
saying the
mean.
Opposite of what you do.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's trying to be, like, metaphorical. Like, she will take no prisoners. In her day-to-day life, she takes prisoners. Out here, no prisoners. Doesn't really make sense as a saying, does it? You want to take prisoners. I mean, you'd be a terrible corrections officer if you took no prisoners.
If you took no prisoners, yeah.
But you are getting made redundant. You have, mm-hmm. you have doing absolutely mm-hmm. failing professionally if that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Is she a world champion corrections officer?
I'm absolutely sure of it. I don't know what that would entail. It's not a competition I wish to watch. It's not something, it's not a forum I wish to know about.
No.
But
No,
what it is.
You take no prisoners.
Yeah. Well, look, she's not a champion if she takes no prisoners. That's like the only requirement of being a world champion corrections officer. But
you, Shannon Gus, take no prisoners.
In terms of what? Because I'm not a corrections
officer. Do you have any prisoners?
No.
I mean, do you have them tied up in a slinky jail?
No, I mean, I don't. Most people take no prisoners. That's like a really specific thing to do. Just only corrections officer, I guess.
Yeah. I take no prisoners. I've never taken one prisoner.
Yeah. I've got no prisoners here, no skeletons at all. I don't know why I'm sounding so suspicious. I literally don't. I don't take prisoners. Like, I would agree with you. But here's the thing. She doesn't need to be a champion. There are two ways to get cast. I actually got recently asked this. How do I get cast on the show? I'm like, so many ways. So easy. Be an Olympian. Be a 300-game AFL legend. You know? That's how you do it. Or you have a really interesting job. Something like a corrections officer where you could say something like, I take no prisoners, like a pain researcher.
Right. I'm a real estate empath.
Real estate. Yeah. Or be a superhero. That's the third thing. But yeah, those are pretty much.
Right. Yeah. Spin doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
World champion log cutter.
Yeah. He's a world champion. So exactly. So
be a world champion or have an interesting job.
Yeah, that is literally it. So.
Yeah. Boy. The fix really was in, though, of that Gerald, and then the first challenge was do a puzzle or chop a log, because it is not chopping a log is not a Survivor staple. Like, I can think of very few, like chop a rope, perhaps. But there has never been a Survivor challenge that I can recall where there was like a log that had to be chopped in half with an axe.
Yeah, I mean, look, they actually like so someone
what is this, tough as nails.
I think that there was someone who was a alternate because actually, what a day before someone pulled out and they were actually the world champion slide puzzle doer. So yes. Yeah, so that was why I was so fair, and they had those. But then when that person pulled out, we got someone who was a world champion and like something else that wasn't relevant to the challenge. So
right.
Yeah.
It would be like if Shannon was on the season and then the first puzzle was like untie this slinky to get the key to drop.
How many times have we said slinky in this podcast?
Not enough.
Well, people act like it's not a thing. It's really, really hard to do. Yeah. So look, I'd be here for it. That's the only way I'm getting cast, if I actually find that this is a competition to become a world champion in it.
It's a valuable skill because that I don't even want any slinkies in the house because I know they're going to get tangled in 5 seconds.
Nope. Slinky untangled to the rescue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I can teach you if you want after this call over Zoom, if you want me to teach you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know.
I would feel like I was stealing from you. I feel like you should be charging money for that.
No, it's like a superpower. Like, I don't think that you could necessarily just learn it. It's really like quite a talent to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. Should we get to the chivvy after we talk about the slinky over and over?
Sure. I'm just looking through my notes if there's anything else that I wanted to touch on. But yeah, let's do the chizzy.
Okay. Take it away, Jacob Sega Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right, Rob, do you want to go first or shall I on the chizzy for week one?
Okay. So I can go first.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's hear your thoughts.
So I don't have to repeat, what you say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with 3, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The rules are really out the door at the moment. But like, yeah, start with 3, 2, 1. There's a theme song. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Start with 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have to give 3 points to Kez. I mean, she's coming off certainly a fishy worthy episode. She seemed like, you know, it's weird.
We are not affiliated with the fishy and we don't know. Yeah.
Yes.
No copyright problems.
Steve Fishback seasons coming up in the countdown. So I feel like we can channel him. But I felt like in the second episode, like I felt like that Kez was not super like visible in terms of like what was going on. And we saw a lot of like flick. So you seem like, OK, I'm the person, I'm the swing vote. It seemed like that Shannon was much, much more involved. But Kez really emerged in the third episode. So I will give 3 chizzy points to Kez.
Mm-hmm.
Then I feel like that I don't love the sort of position that he put himself in, but he seemed like that everybody wants to work with him. And give me 2 spicy chizzy points for Big D.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many he's going to get this season.
Oh,
but
my God, you're doing it. So you're actually doing it.
He brought so much to the first week and that, you know, give most of the credit to Wei on that second episode puzzle. But you have to say the MVP of the challenge for the brains. He saved his butt in the third episode. Give it to King George.
There you go. And you know what, Rob? Do you know what I just heard? 3 months ago, the Brains Tribe just mentioned you because you just mentioned George. You exist now on the Brains Tribe. That's how it works.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I just I love George. I will listen to any podcast you ever do with George in the future.
Oh,
he
wow.
will be an incredible guest.
Did you hear that, George? You just got booked by the big boss. That's like
yes.
incredible. Wow, what a week for George.
He will come out of the gate so hot. He will he will throw shade. He will that he will be somebody who it's like, okay, oh, he's going to be a great podcast guest one day.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you give me a point for that for as a future podcast guest.
I'm telling you that he's going to bring I will be fascinated by this season as long as he is involved.
That is true. That's not really what chili points are meant to be for, but you know what? They're your points. I've heard worse.
Yeah, but yeah, the man did. He was the one person out of 22 people who was able to look at that puzzle and figure it out. He brought his tribe to a blowout victory in where he would surely have been receiving votes at the tribal council.
Yes.
He saved himself. Only enhanced his position in the tribe. Give the man one chizzy point.
Okay.
Come on.
That is the one he will get. No spoilers, but you can take that one from you. I mean, I love George as well. Look, from a TV perspective, I love it. I spent roughly 45 minutes criticizing his move earlier in the podcast. I can't give him points because...
As did I.
Yeah.
I think he did a terrible job in the first episode.
Okay.
I just happened to like the mechanism that allowed him to screw it up. But I find him to be super compelling. I know some people will hate his guts
and
will cringe every time he's on the screen. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, let's also guys, let's be a little, I think I say this every time and it's hopefully not the listeners, but next time you want to send out a really personal tweet about George,
is George getting a lot of personal tweets?
I think it's been a roller coaster because the first night I was like, oh, poor George, there was quite a bit of quite personal stuff against George that I was seeing. But then on the third night I tweeted cheering for George because he won and everyone seemed to be agreeing. And I was like, all right, we're all kind of on the ride together. And that's kind of fun. So
Australian Survivor is a roller coaster,
yeah,
everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. Being a George fan is a roller coaster as well. So strap in. Absolutely strap in for the George-ney. That's what it's going to be. The journey. The George journey.
George journey.
The George-ney. Kind of works. I need Mike. I miss Mike. So I'm going to give 3 points to someone you didn't give points to. We talk about,
yes.
Who's copying.
That?
Yeah, Flick. My winner pick. Flick.
Oh, okay.
I think, the swing vote who was wanted by both sides... In the second episode, then she maintained her group and her power. The connection with Kez is something I really enjoy. She got told about the idol in the majority both times. Again, I lean to keeping Janelle if that was something that was physically possible. I don't know if it was possible. And I also think fine for a first easy vote and then you go for the jugular, which apparently was Gavin, but total control, very into it. I will give 2 points to Dani as well. He definitely could have been more subtle about being the swing vote. But again, by being wanted by both sides in this very divided group, I think is quite telling about his social game. I like the decision that he made as a swing vote. I also think for him, he definitely benefited the most from the Janelle vote because while I might think everyone else, okay, now you're reliant on Dani next time. Now you're wasting an idol. Now it's a little bit more contentious for you. For Dani, you've made yourself indispensable. So he needs Janelle to go out in the second vote. I think it was the perfect move for him, if anyone. Maybe not for the girls and going down the line, I'm not sure about Benny and Gerald, but in terms of the Janelle vote, he'd now put himself in a 6 instead of a 7 and as a pivotal vote for that 6. So absolutely. I also thought just the fact that we'll see the fallout, but making them vote for Kez just because he could, I just liked it. And even to think to do that, I don't know if how it'll go, but I enjoyed watching it. And then I would give 1 point to Kez. Because I thought it was fair play to play the idol. I thought finding the idol was really fun and cool. Really like her relationships and her standing in it. Really like her relationship with Flick in particular, as I've said. That's why they have 4 points between them from me. And even being the target in the last one did seem pretty random. It just seemed that Dani wanted to make that happen. Whereas Shannon, who I also do love in that trio, and I love that trio, and I love the Australian coven, I just feel the fact that they are actively targeting her as the head of the snake this early... concerns for me. So I didn't give her points in the coven, but I am really enjoying the coven. I haven't given to any of the brains because I feel like they really did not go to tribal council pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it's pretty vague, just kind of unified against George. I couldn't give points to George as we've discussed and who else was I going to give points to in there? So I had to keep it all brawn heavy right now. And those are the points. So Danny and Kev have tied the Chile win this week with 4 points each.
Yeah. Flick, had we done this podcast after the second episode, would have definitely rated, but then she kind of fell off the radar after the third episode. Third episode is every third episode is going to really affect the rankings.
The third episodes, I put out a tweet about this too, of Australian Survivor are often like excellent. And I think that they are really good at kind of like having it build up in the week. Like, you know, I think the Daisy vote of All Stars that we spoke about last time was like the best episode of the season in the end. You did so well, Rob. I hope that's not what happens this season, but you came in week one. That was pretty much the height of All Stars. Well done on that.
Well, I don't even remember the exact debate that we were having, but we had a spirited debate in the first week of Australia. And like, Dave is playing way too hard. I don't like what he did. And you were like, no, I actually do like it. I'm like, no, Shannon, like this is he can't sustain this. This is day five of 48. Like, this is not going to go. Like, at some point, he can't keep this up.
Yeah, so it was not so funny. Yeah, I mean, look, no, like it was improbable what he did, Rob. Like that, like it was a great move, but like no one should have thought that Dave could.
My argument was sound, but I was clearly wrong.
I was into what Dave did that week, and then I went on to Talking Tribal. I was like, great move, really amazing. Like I don't love that it was out of revenge, but like really good. And I just remember like it's not funny. It was really bad. Like the casual audience that watched Talking Tribal were just like incensed that I had even dared to comment that it had been revenge driven. And I was like, because at the time I was still replying to people online, which, you know, I learned the hard way. Largely through that, you don't do that. But I was like, no, like, I'm not even criticizing it. Rob Sestanino, like the number one Survivor commentator in the world, actually did criticize it. Like,
and
you know,
I love Dave, but I thought it was too much.
Yeah, no, yeah. Look, like they didn't come for you, Rob, but look, I learned early on, Dave has a lot of stands. And I've been told,
and rightfully so.
Yeah, no, like, look, I've been told, I've gotten hate for being too high on Dave and for being too critical of Dave. So that's how I think I actually really analyze Dave's game pretty much perfectly.
Yes, yes. That's how you know that you are perfect. When you can be attacked from two diametrically opposed sides on a given issue, it means that you're probably right where you're supposed to be.
Yeah,
and I know that well.
Yes. So look, that was a lot. It's nice to take the heat down. It's not All Stars, which is kind of nice. We care about these people, but not so much that you're going to send me hateful DMs, right, guys? All right. let's have a good season, everyone. Not these listeners. I should say that on Talking Tribal a bit more, maybe. Okay. But everyone seems like they're being cool, so it's good. Thanks.
Shannon, you give me the list of the hateful DM people. I will block them in unison.
It was a long time ago, Rob. Okay. It'll be good, I think. Anyway, on that extremely positive note, we have JLP tweets. Now, I pretty much took every JLP tweet, and I was like, at a point I had to start editing because it's so many, but like he's just great. He's just a great tweeter. So I've got that. Also, what he's doing is he capitalizes every name and the tribe name every time. I wonder if like marketing told him to do that, so like everyone kind of knows who the people are, because he does it every time and it's quite new. Sure,
what do you mean?
Like, so he'll say like,
oh, in his tweets,
yeah,
he's
exactly.
capitalizing
like
every
single
person's
yeah.
name.
So I don't know why. I think
did he? Oh, like in all caps?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think even like that seems like that would be grammatically correct to capitalize the first letter.
No, the whole thing.
All caps. Okay.
I'll read it as such, and you'll see. Like, oh, okay. Anyway, so we tweeted, this opening is so Mad Max. I only wish they'd let me play my electric guitar on the back of the truck. I thought this was a little bit of like a humble brag. He can play the electric guitar. Now we know, you know, mm-hmm. he wasn't great enough.
Yeah. And they had a Mad Max scene in Space Jam, A New Legacy.
They did. I've had a lot of Mad Max this week. I really mm-hmm. have. He also said, for a moment there, I thought everyone was going to leap out of their vehicles and start singing the Jet song, hashtag West Side Story. Quite a neat reference there from JLP. Yeah.
And did they have the players driving their own vehicles?
It was in Australia, so yeah, they'd all have valid licenses. In fact, most of them are from Old/Queensland,
isn't that interesting?
And that's where
like,
it is.
We've never had that before, where like the contestants are driving themselves to the game.
Well, I thought about that, but then I'm like, well, they always drive their own car, like the car award. They like drive it away. So like,
yes, but. It's the first time that we've ever seen Survivor contestants be like driving their own vehicles to start the game.
Yes, it's right. It's like, guys, just show up. You'll see the car. Yeah. Yeah, just kind of hang out. Do you think they were like kind of playing some music, like a bit of a carpool for each of them? Like, it looked epic, but then once they cut like the really dramatic music, it's like, better shape up. I don't know what song they would be singing. You know?
That's what that was.
I don't know. I went to Greece. I don't know. I'd be playing
Hamilton.
It
was like a race. There was a race in Greece.
Yeah, exactly.
There was no flying car at the end.
Yeah. Like, I would really be, someone would be pained if they were in my car. Because I'd be playing Hamilton. I'd be like rapping the whole thing, and I'd be first boot.
Spamilton.
Yeah, it's Slamilton.
Yeah,
listen to our Space Jam podcast, guys. Obviously, you didn't check out Slamilton if you just called it Spamilton.
Why is it Slamilton? It's not Space Slam.
No, because come on and slam and welcome to the jam.
Okay.
Okay. Wow, you did not check out Slamilton even a little bit. That cannot be more clear. Yeah.
Do you think that the people that were like the passengers in people's cars, like, do you think that those people like bonded on the ride over? Like, I think it might be fun to go back and look and see if people like actually like aligned with the people that they were sitting in the car with.
I mean, I don't think so. The one pair that I did notice was like Andrew and Wei.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I guess. I want to go back and see who was with George, because I'm surprised that person didn't get like all the airtime in the car. Great news. You are with George. You will now get screen time. Yes.
Yes.
It was very good. And like the fact that they just like are just, you know, looking at each other and you're like, wow, if one of them accelerates, they could have a 1 in 22 person chance, not 1 in 24. So that's a choice they could have made. I mean, they'd probably be eliminated had they run over another car.
Yeah.
I think
okay.
So. Yeah, okay. He says, close challenge, but Braun, all caps, brings home the bacon. Who knew they could spell? A little bit of shaded Braun there.
A little bit of shade. Shannon, as a Hamilton stan, will you be bringing back the wand off for any sort of King George parodies?
Yeah, I have seen the memes. I mean, kind of writes itself, I guess. You're going back.
It's very on the nose.
To the camp. I didn't tell you all that you would leave. I played this wrong. Yeah, like that really does write itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Rob still gave me a chizzy point. Okay. Yeah, we don't even need the whatever. It just makes way too much sense. Yeah.
But, like, this is just like on the fly.
Okay, so many more JLP tweets. He said, Simon Sparkler's stick left Braun with freezing ... What is he trying to say here? I bring this up.
Simon Sparkler's stick,
so without fire, left Braun with freezing ...
Okay, wait, say it one more time. I think
Sparkler's stick left Braun with freezing ...
I think he's trying to rhyme stick.
With what?
It's a family podcast, Shannon.
But is that it? Because that doesn't make any sense.
I think it's like a limerick.
Right. Okay. Because I also thought maybe that's it, but then I thought that's not a thing. So
I don't think it's a thing, but maybe it is to JLP.
Wait, Simon Sparkler's stick left Braun with freezing D words. Is that what he means? Like big D words? That's what he means? With freezing big Ds? Is that what he meant?
Freezing big D.
But rhyming.
I mean, I think he's going for rhyming. I mean, what else would it be? I mean, if this was Match Game, wouldn't that be your answer, right?
Yeah, it would be, but it would be senseless, much like the advantage.
What else could it be?
Simon Sparkler's stick left Braun with freezing bodies. It's really cold out there, guys. Stay warm. I don't know.
Yeah.
No,
say,
you're right.
Say bodies.
So that's what he means.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, there are like six dots. So
six dots.
Or maybe five. I can't really see this one. Much like Queensland and Old. It's quite small. This one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sad story.
He said, seems like even the Macedonian Jesus can be bought with donation money. Which was, you know, that's another George shout out that George says that he like helped the Macedonian church get like a grant.
Yes.
And now Macedonian Jesus is looking after him. It's so cool that even Macedonian Jesus has got more airtime than the people on Brains who refuse to talk about George. Like, we're getting more from Macedonian Jesus in Georgia. So it's pretty good. He said Brains had a nice lead in this challenge, but only one ball in your sack is not enough to keep you out of tribal council.
Oh, no.
So why do you have to dot, dot, dot the other stuff, but that stuff you just said?
I don't think you said a swear word there.
Yeah, fair enough. There you go.
I mean,
there you go.
One ball in your sack is PG-13. The other big D is R-rated.
Right, right. JLP goes, yeah. JLP
is not going to like that. Yeah,
like they, I don't know. Like, I can't tell what is like lovable Larrick and JLP that the network is like on board with, and like what stuff they're like. Mm-mm. And I think like Simon Sparkler's stick left Braun with freezing dot 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 might be the one that they're like not super into. I bet JLP actually wanted to say it, and Ten was like, no.
Yeah, they're like no.
His preview of, I think it was the second episode, the wrestling episode, was like a picture of, I think it was like two of the guys wrestling. It was probably Emmett. And it said, join us tonight as the players share their favorite intimate positions with each other.
Yeah, that's not even like a pun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even work for what he's talking about.
Yeah. I think we're getting a bit of a theme. I think we're getting understanding what the JLP tweets are going to be. He said, wait, did Emmett just say he was the ultimate tool? Good job with the fire, though.
Hmm.
How come JLP is allowed to tweet about Emmett, but I'm not?
Why are you not allowed to tweet about Emmett?
It's not that I'm not allowed to tweet about him. It's just that every time I have an idea for a tweet, I say to Peter, like, and Peter's like, he's a human being. And I'm like, okay.
You have a mean tweet about Emmett?
It's not a mean tweet. It's just that, like, it's... Nothing that I'm going to say isn't quite shady, and I'm just trying to be a little bit more positive.
But I mean, the man is asking for it.
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely is. Like, I called him the Copper God, okay? I feel like that one's just obvious.
Yes. I mean, he's like a wrestling bad guy. He's like kissing his muscles and like talking about like he's taunting the other team. Like, I think that anything you're going to say about him on Twitter is warranted. Nobody's gonna be like, why are you bullying?
Oh, no one will. But the thing is, then everyone will like respond and be like, yeah, he's the worst person alive. And I'll be like,
yeah, okay. Well, you're going to get it. So basically you're the spark and then the forest fire.
And the freezing
I get that.
D's.
I get that. Yeah.
So I'm keeping the D's freezing, basically. Not sparking it at the moment. It's been two episodes. Like, I love that Emmett just like didn't exist in the premiere and then just like emerged in the second one, and you were like, oh my god, what is happening right now? So I'm letting Peter kind of keep me in check a little bit, you know, just because I know, because the thing is, like, I will put up a meme that's like, I've had Emmett for 5 minutes and I've never wanted anyone to lose this challenge more, or something I was going to say. And then, like, they'll be like, everyone will agree, and I'll be like, did I need to do this? And I've just said it on the podcast anyway.
Yeah.
What was the point?
I mean, his move to taunt in the reward challenge in the second episode
was infuriating.
Unprecedented.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, can you recall anybody ever attempting anything like that on any franchise of Survivor?
No, I mean, I can't. And, like, that's the thing is that, because people, like, he's trying to be Dave, right? That's the point. But, like, people say that Dave was quite different in confessional to who he was on the island. And I think that is quite a big difference. Like, it seems impossible for us to understand that, like, the stuff that Dave was doing alone with the popcorn in confessional, like, when people's backs were turned, like, yes, was like Emmett, but, like, super charismatic. But I think to people he was being, like, not like that. Whereas, like, Emmett is clearly being like this to other humans, and then they're, like, not enjoying it because it's not enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, because then they went on. He's like, well, I didn't lose the challenge. It's like, yeah, but it's kind of not about that, is it? Like, you almost,
like, if
did.
I would have lost the challenge, you could vote me out.
Yeah, which was funny because they went on and on talking about it when he'd actually won. And George and Baden had the whole back and forth about the Gavin matchup when Baden had actually won that too. So it was like a lot of like talks about. But like, this one was actually warranted because I did believe it's like, if that's how you're going to approach challenges, like, maybe you won this one, but like, you won't win the next. Like, you made a dicey. Why on earth? Like, what human would do that? Is that what I would say in a tweet if I was trying to not be... Okay. Look, it's the very end of the podcast, so...
Yeah.
People are here that they really want to be here.
Only the lovers are here.
Oh, absolutely not, Rob, but I love that you think that. I can tell you for a fact that that's not true. Okay. He also said Emmett at the reward challenge, and then he put a video of someone backflipping and landing face first in the mud. kind of hard not to see visually.
Yeah. But Emmett won at the reward challenge, no?
Yeah. It doesn't really make sense, JLP does it. But I do agree that he also did fall on his face. It's both things.
Yeah, he's trying to show off, then ultimately fell on his face. But then, like, I will say that then it wasn't as easy as Emmett thought. Like, he kind of, like, didn't go according to plan, even though ultimately it worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the most faithfully win that you can get. Like, that's what it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Right.
He
right.
was trying to be fancy, and he just, it wasn't fancy at all. It looked really dumb. JLP said, the music is so dramatic in this tribal. Just wish it was a little louder. I love JLP shading production. Because we've gotten that. Like, it's very epic. Epic is the word we use.
Yes. I don't know
if there's a negative other word that's similar and a synonym.
Yeah, it gets a little Michael Bay at Tribal Council. Yes. Is that what you're saying? Love you, Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, I don't even know what the, like, it's like, I feel like that the, like, Inception was, like, the first thing to really use these, like, a lot of, like, so I guess it's kind of like a didgeridoo, I guess, if we're in Australia.
Yeah. Look, it's not just the music. Like, everything is like that. Have you seen the giant lettering? Like, that's the whole point. The whole thing is a Michael Bay movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Bay movies have, like, is it confusing endings or something's wrong with... Yeah, that was the first episode. There you go.
Yeah.
Michael Bay movie.
Yeah. Love you, Michael Bay.
JLP said, Braun's challenge strategy put Simon and Emmett, their two biggest tosses, up front. P.S. Only a tosser thinks they're not a tosser. Rob, do you know what a tosser is?
I believe I do.
What is it? Somebody tosses things?
Somebody who is not master of their domain.
Okay, like a loser.
Sure.
Did you look that up for this podcast?
What I was saying was not quite the definition of a loser.
Right. Well, what are you saying?
I guess I'm wrong.
No.
I guess I'm wrong.
No.
Yeah.
No. You're talking Seinfeld?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Why did you think that's what it was?
I don't know. Maybe that's like Cockney slang.
Okay. I don't know that that's a thing. Like, our tosser is just like a loser. Like a...
Yeah.
Like a bit of a... I mean, I'll Google it up exactly if you want me to.
Yeah. So that I feel like that. I think the way I'm using it is sort of a synonym for a wanker.
Yeah. Okay.
But maybe more like the literal definition. Yeah.
Yeah. No. That's wanker. Do you have wanker, or is that just ours?
I think you could say it as a funny word. I think wanker would be.
Oh no!
Probably
here it says a tosser, a useless idiot, a wanker.
Yeah.
Jono can't do anything right. That's the example. But. All right, but I would say a wanker is what you meant. Like, it is a synonym for that, but I wouldn't have thought of it like that. Also, like, you don't know what I'm doing to you because we, on Survivor South Africa podcast, we kept saying a word that was bleeped out, and then our guest, who was South African, was telling us that it was a word, like, for dick. Like, you're a...
Yeah.
Yeah. But then we said it, like, a ton, and then apparently it was actually, like, the C word in Afrikaans.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's all. That's still on the podcast. Yeah. Anyway, no, but like a tosser, I think is fine. Wanker, slightly different, but I guess the synonym. This has been your education in Aussie slang.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last JLP tweet is he said, which way will Big D swing tonight?
Yeah.
Which was the obvious one. The night before he had said, which way will Flick swing tonight? So I like that he like set it up to be just a regular tweet, knowing that like the Big D one would absolutely kill on Twitter.
Yes.
Very good preparation.
He basically got you with the first one. Like, nope, this is just what I tweet.
Yeah.
This is, you have a dirty mind. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Anytime there's a swing vote, this is what I tweet.
I tweet this before every tribal council.
Yeah, exactly. Who can argue that? So we have some questions from the listeners.
Please.
All right. Kale Garling says, given the drastic change to the setting, does US Survivor also need to consider a change of scenery? Yeah, what does this make you think? Like we've said, we love the setting. Does this make you like even more like, let's get out of Fiji? Or are you like, it's fine, it's fun, it's definitely good, but like also does setting matter? Like just go back to Fiji.
you know, it's a complicated question because I think everybody's like, yes, something different. But, you know, that being in Fiji and having a permanent home in Fiji, like, allows the U.S. Survivor to shoot two seasons a year. So, like,
Australia's going to try to do that, too, I think.
OK, and where are they going to be? Are they going to move twice a year?
No, I think in Australia. But yeah, okay. I think I don't think as one thing. Like in 2019, mm-hmm. they shot two seasons, but they were a few months apart in Fiji. And now they would probably try to do that in Australia.
Okay. So, like, I guess the question for people, and I think especially with like the ongoing COVID situation, I don't see like there being like them moving the production at this point. So the question I would ask for the listeners is, if it meant only one Survivor season a year, like, would you be wanting the show to move around the world?
Oh my God, absolutely not. Who would?
Yeah.
No. Oh,
Fiji, it's fine. It's not like objectively bad. It does sound like that U.S. Survivor is going to try to have you talked to? Can we stop down for a second just because I don't get the chance to talk to you that much about what Jeff Probst said about U.S. Survivor coming up?
Yes. What did he say?
I'm just really curious to say that that when Jeff Probst made that video and he talked about how like this season of Survivor, we heard you and like we went back.
He
to the
heard
drawing
me
board
specifically.
He didn't say we heard you,
okay.
But he said like we had so much time to think and what we came up with. Like you could say that this is Survivor 41 and you could drop the four because this is basically like a whole new Survivor. Mm-hmm. This is Survivor 2.0. And we're like, okay. And he said that this time, basically, it's like a horror movie and the game is a monster and it's going to keep coming. And it sounds like that they really went all in on making the game, like the conditions harder,
then he did not hear us because no one was asking for that.
Nobody was asking for that, right?
Yeah. We heard you. We did exactly what we wanted, like always. We heard you. We just didn't care. We always hear you.
We heard you. But I do wonder if they, at the same time, if that means, like, if that's what they did as a way to, like, unwind, like, sort of, like, some of the complicated and unnecessary game mechanics. Mm.
Yeah, it's like they still, look, guys, I can say this now that I'm a producer. You don't need the game to be a monster, and you don't need the game mechanics. Just have a great cast. That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Put them in the game. It's a fun game. Simple game. Great cast. Like, this is what I feel about Australian Survivor as well. It's like, do you guys trust the people that you cast? Because if not, we've got bigger problems. Like, if you think you need to rely on, like, the big twists or, like, the game being a monster, like, you trust the people that you cast to give you good TV. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, look. I'm loving the Survivor that we have other than the premiere. I love Survivor South Africa. I really loved, as I said, this third episode in particular. I'm enjoying the week and I'm willing to give the US a shot too. Season 40, one of my favorite seasons of all time. So like maybe in spite of production, but like I am all in on hoping for the best.
You're not going to stop watching Survivor is what you're saying.
Imagine if I did, who would I be?
Well,
I'd just be a slinky detangler.
That's
all I'd be. Simple life.
Mm-hmm.
Detangling slinkies and not at all podcasting about Survivor. Maybe I'd get out of my pajamas sometimes. Probably not.
Yeah.
When I do Talking Tribal, I have to get dressed. I'm still in my apartment, but I do have to put on clothes. So that's a small victory.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I get dressed for podcasts also.
Oh, really? Are you dressed right now?
No, but this isn't a video podcast.
Okay.
I mean, I'm clothed.
Let
the record show.
Yeah. But in my pajamas.
Yeah.
It's after midnight for me. So it's like a sleepover podcast. Exactly.
I mean, this is the most successful sleepover podcast I've ever been a part of.
There you go. I kind of understand that reference. I'm part of Renap now. I'll do one more question.
Multiple appearances.
There you go. Tristan Fernall says, who is Rob's winner pick? Shannon, would you change your winner pick? I mean, I'll quickly say no, I would not. I gave her three shizzy points. It could not be going better. Go Flick forever. Rob, who is your winner pick?
Okay. So if I get a winner pick here after a week, boy, what an advantage that would be.
Even more powerful. Talk to Mike Bloom about that.
Yeah, even more powerful than being able to take six people out of a tribal council.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would think Okay, this is Australian Survivor. Although I guess that some of the winners have been somewhat under the radar. I mean, not as recently as last season.
Well, yourself said you would not have chosen Dave, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't have chosen Dave, which said he was too big. But I wouldn't have chosen, like, Pia also.
Well, Pia in the first episode said I'll either be out first or win, and she had already not been out first. So I think she kind of told us herself how it was going.
Yeah. So, boy, who could be?
You wouldn't have chosen Christy. This might be kind of hard. We'll see. You wouldn't have chosen Christy at, like, the final six. So
no.
Maybe
no,
the final four.
Final four.
Yeah. Possibly the final two. This might be hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, who could it be? Who could be the winner pick? All right. So if you picked Flick, yeah. Mike picked Shannon, I'll take Kez.
Yes, the Coven trifecta.
Let's round it out.
Nice. And you gave her three chizzy points, so it kind of works out.
Gave her three chizzy points. So she had a good, I mean, I wouldn't have known who she was by the second episode, but we'll go with her. Okay. And I want to pick George. And then I also want to pick Kara also, but Kara had like a non-existent first week.
Yeah. And also George would be an absolutely terrible pick.
No, terrible. They said he'd be a terrible winner. It would be the greatest season in the history of the show.
I love George, but he's not winning the game.
Yeah.
0% chance.
Yeah. Shannon, what's with Australian Survivor? I saw zero butts this week.
That is a really good point. Where were the butts? You're right. Maybe because it's
maybe that
hot.
Was a note.
No. I think maybe because there's less water or...
Oh,
yeah,
maybe.
You're right. Something was missing. You think they would have CGI'd in a butt or something.
Yeah.
Guys, like, look, we're really loving the entertainment. George... Good stuff.
No butts.
But like,
nobody
can you
got
take
naked.
Your pants off? Yeah. I think it would have had to have been George. Other people probably were getting naked, but George wasn't talking about it.
But the scene when George is like, I think we should rest. And they're like, wait, what? What do you mean? He's like, yeah, we won't be tired for the challenge. And then he went for a walk and he came back. And he's like, I'm so tired.
Yeah. I love that, though. That's smart. Because I'm, like, famously pro-rest.
Made the fire while he was on his walk, getting tired.
Yeah, there you go. Well, no, I mean, like, walking and making fire, I think, like, exerting yourself to quite different degrees.
And then when George was, like, everybody was awake the next day, and George is, like, the only, like, in the shelter snoring while they're talking about, like, what he did. And then later on, they're talking about, like when he says we should rest. And, like, you mean go to sleep? He's like, no, I only sleep 2 hours a night.
I mean, that's crazy.
But he's the only person.
No wonder
who,
he needs rest.
You said you don't like it that Survivor sleep shames. You take a lot of naps. But George is the only person that we saw sleeping in this entire season.
No, that's not good. That is a death sentence for his winner edit, which was, you know,
and
otherwise
it just happened to be the 2 hours
winner.
That he sleeps.
Yeah, that's unfair. Also, I'm going to use that tomorrow during work. Like, hey, have you got that article done? I think we should rest, all right? But you are employed with us. I think we should be using that all the time.
I'm sorry, did you say we should rest? Like, go to sleep, Shannon?
No, I'm just going to take a walk. I actually can't walk. I'm in quarantine. But,
you
know,
you
just
could pace.
Feel... Yeah, I could pace. Pacing isn't relaxing.
I'm sure it is to some people.
It is only fitting that we would end this podcast talking about George. As it should be. As the show wants it to be.
Yes. I love him.
Yes. Yes. Go George. Definitely on the George knee train. Rob, give us all the plugs. What are you doing at the moment? What is...
Oh, that's it? We're done?
What else?
Let me see. I really like this group.
Okay.
This is very, very fun. Great start to the season. It's always so fun to get together with you.
Thank you.
Got to talk with Akiva. I mean, this is basically Renap without Akiva, this podcast.
And yeah, I've been on Renap with you, like with you and Akiva one time, and it was 24 hours ago. But sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've been on more than one
time.
Yeah,
but like in a panel, but I'm saying that like...
A panel.
Yeah, solo. This is Renap, me and you
solo
without
solo.
Akiva. We've only done that one time, and it was within the last calendar day. So,
Yeah, we talked about Space Jam, colon, A New Legacy. Shannon is a very big, in addition to untangling slinkies and being an authority on all things Survivor, is also a big fan of the original Space Jam.
Don't put them all together, Rob. That seems mean.
There's three chizzy points for untangling slinkies, two chizzy points for knowing about Survivor, and one chizzy point for knowing everything about Space Jam.
And for that reason, I would be a nerd on the Brains Tribe. That is why. I wouldn't even be a cool brain. But look, we talked about Space Jam. It was super fun. I told Rob to listen to Slamilton, and in this podcast, he called it Spamilton. So don't recommend things to
Rob. I'm sorry, Shannon. In the last 24 hours, I've had to watch Survivor Philippines and a week of Australian Survivor. I haven't had time to watch Slamilton.
It's an audio medium, Rob. Your life would be richer for listening to it. Whatever.
You know, I have a family.
Okay, look, I'm grateful that you watched The Week. I'm just saying that, like, to call it Spamilton, I just felt, what is Spamilton?
Okay, I
you should have said Jamilton. It would have made more sense if you said Space Jamilton, but Spamilton.
Well, I knew it started with an S. I was like, I didn't understand why it wasn't called, it was called Slam.
We've talked it to death.
Okay. Shannon, what is Cheap Seats, and why is 10Play trying to get me to watch it so badly?
Why are you not the first person to ask that? It's a new show that's on after Survivor. It's like a newsy show. I mean, look, I switched off it. I went to Talking Tribal. So I'm not.
Yeah,
super
but what is it about? Like the whole show is like that. There's 26 players in this season. There's two people from Cheap Seats.
Yeah, we just didn't see them because they weren't talking about George.
Sports? Do they argue about sports? Is it like two people that get into an argument like First Take?
It's just like a funny newsy show.
How funny?
I didn't watch. I watched Talking Tribal instead. Because when you go on 10Play, it's like Survivor, Bachelor, Talking Tribal, Cheap Seats. So take that, Cheap Seats. Which is like an actual show on the network, which is on the digital platform for now.
Yeah. So Cheap Seats, it's the new show from the makers of Have You Been Paying Attention?
Yeah.
That's aggressive.
Hey, don't mock our Australian TV landscape.
I'm not. I'm saying aren't you the queen of like product placement? I feel like that it doesn't.
Why
count?
Was it so aggressive? Where was Cheap Seats?
Okay, where was it? It was all over the bottom of the screen.
Oh, the bottom of Cheap the Seats. Screen.
Like, and they kept showing like the hosts.
Okay, I don't know if that
Melanie Bracewell and Tim McDonald.
I think maybe your version's on like yours is the 10Play version.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it was there so significantly.
It's like a podcast.
Yeah, it's like a newsy. I'm here to plug, you know, Talking Tribal. Like, I think, you know, after Survivor, don't watch Cheap Seats. Like, switch off, go to Talking Tribal for your media takes about the show. It's no more talking about Cheap Seats. They're like our direct competitor.
Sorry, I didn't know that they were your direct competitor.
Well, I just made that up right now, but still.
Okay.
Yeah. What else, Rob?
All right, you should call Talking Tribal Expensive Seats.
I don't have any jurisdiction over what we call Talking Tribal. I don't even have jurisdiction over what we call this show.
Yeah, what do you want to call it? Expensive Seats?
No, Rob and Shannon have a podcast.
Okay.
Rochelle.
That's a big commitment for me now to be joining you on the Australian Survivor coverage.
Yeah. Well, no, I meant the whole
really
network.
Really thrown a span.
No, I meant the whole network. I'm like shooting a shot. Yeah.
Okay.
Great response.
You want to be on every podcast? You want to be watching Big Brother, Shannon?
No. Not even a tiny little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. I have nothing more to offer than what I'm currently giving.
Not true. You could be podcasting about slinkies.
I know you're not doing it on purpose, but you're making me out to be a very specific type of person.
Mm-hmm. You said it was your superpower.
Yes, I know, but it's only a small part of who I am. Stop going on about it. Okay. I am good at it, though.
All right.
It's fun to do.
Yeah. So Shannon is going to talk about Space Jam, which I don't want to give the podcast away, but I thought Shannon was very unfair in her takes about a wonderful film.
What was I more harsh on? Space Jam or The Advantage?
Well, let's just say Shannon liked the twist more than she liked Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. It's a toss up for me. Yeah. Okay.
And then, of course, we talked about the 11th best season of Survivor. And Shannon, we are ramping up the machine to go do a fast forward again this week on the Survivor all-time top 40 countdown. We are 75% of the way there. Mm-hmm. We have watched 30 seasons of Survivor this year. And so we are not going to make it to the start of US Survivor on September 22nd if we continue at our current pace. So we have to pick up the pace once again. So we will talk about the 10th best season of Survivor. Do you already know what it is?
I actually don't. What is
it? Yes. Survivor Token Sheens. What do you think? Too high, too low?
I think I probably would have it roughly around there. Because I actually have been, like, so exactly with the listeners. Like, the top, I think, 15, 14 of my 15 were in the 15 or something. Like, I don't have any hot takes about this. So, I'm like...
You're an influencer.
I'm going to, when I come on the podcast soon-ish to talk about some countdowns, I'm going to complain just as much as you about having to watch Australian Survivor and a whole season of the show. And I didn't get to check out whatever you recommended to me yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to do that on Saturday of this week with Ali Lasher and Jordan Kalish. Talk about the 10th best season of Survivor. And then I will be back with the 9th best season of Survivor on Tuesday. So it's going to be really
enthusiasm with which you muster that.
Like, well, it's a quick turn. It's a quick turn.
How are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
Because we're not gonna make it.
We're not gonna
be done before U.S. Survivor starts. So we have to pick up the pace.
Oh my God, Rob! Like there has to be a better way.
It would have been easier to do this with more of the bad season, but we didn't know when U.S. Survivor was gonna come back, if at all. Like what? Like if it was like if U.S. Survivor was like, oh, we have to shut down production on season 41. We would have had to do it like, all right, well, we're going to do the merge of the 10th best season.
Yeah.
Like a pre-merge. Yeah, we would have to like do 2 weeks on a season. So we didn't know what the schedule was going to be. That's why it happened.
Yeah,
like
no,
this.
I actually remember talking about this with Sam like ages ago, maybe before you even started. And I think I did say like, what if Survivor starts? He's like, oh, we'll just pick it up. And I think that's an easier thing to say like months out than like when you have to watch a season of the show in like 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, there was a non-zero percent chance that Survivor 41 might not happen as planned.
Fair enough.
We were trying to cover all our bases.
You know, getting Survivor back, making Rob do this. Yeah.
Yeah. We have the 10th best season of Survivor coming up on Saturday, and then we'll be turning it around. So it's already like a quick turnaround for the 10th best season, but it'll be a very quick turnaround for the 9th best season of Survivor, which we announced is Survivor, do you know?
No.
Survivor.
I
don't
know 10th. I was going to know 9th.
Yeah.
What is that?
So it's going to be Stephen Fishback week.
Oh,
on
Cambodia.
The podcast. Yes.
Oh, that's too low. I have Cambodia top 5.
Okay. Mm. So that's we have the 10th and the 9th best season of Survivor coming up this week on the podcast, in addition to everything we're doing with Big Brother. And I also appeared with Hannah Shapiro on her Survivor podcast that we have been producing at RHAP called Just My Archetype, where she talks to different survivors that fit a certain archetype and talk about what it's like to be sort of like pigeonholed into this sort of like established archetype that Survivor gives you.
Mm, yeah, that's really fun that you did that. I mean, you did begin that archetype of the superfan.
I was the super fan, but she's also talked to Christian Hubicki and Andrea Belke and Denise Stapley and Julie Rosenberg. And she has another fun one coming up that's in our Survivor podcast feed. But Shannon, anytime you have me on, I'm honored to be on the podcast with you.
Thank you for saying that, Rob. I mean, we have a good time, I think.
I have a great time. Yeah,
we had fun. I've got a lot going on, too, which is rare for me. Damn it, now I'm doing it. Now I'm putting myself out to be a certain type of person, which I do every time.
Well, what certain type of a person who's very busy?
No, a person who doesn't usually have a lot going on, who never gets out of their pajamas, who's like really good at untangling slinkies, who like really loves Space Jam. Ah! I mean, it's all true, but like don't all say it at once. Okay. I've got plugs.
Such a cliche. Yes.
Yeah. In fact, everyone knows that person. So the exit interviews I want to talk about, because I was plugging exit interviews and now they're kind of dicey. I'm sorry, like, to the fans. I was told I was going to get like full access, and now I got Gavin, but I didn't get the first two exits, which was upsetting because I really wanted to talk to like Phil in particular. But now they're like, from week three, maybe it'll be consistent. I don't really know what's going on. I don't want to promise anything because I already like under-delivered on my former promise and I already feel really bad about it. But we will have Gavin coming up after this podcast, in the same podcast.
And don't feel bad.
I do.
It's not like that. That they were like, Shannon, we've got this person on the phone. Like, look, I got to untangle a slinky right now. Not today. you talk to whoever they gave you access to.
Okay. If you don't know me well enough by now to know that I get upset about things that are outside of my control. I'm working on it. But like,
Yeah. But I'm trying to manage the expectations of the listeners. It had nothing to do with Shannon.
No, I couldn't afford
to talk to any survivor person that they were going to put on the phone with her.
Was absolutely here in my pajamas, just waiting for the call. Couldn't get it. Anyway, I've got Gavin coming up after this podcast, in this podcast, after the recap. And I will keep you updated with what is happening. And I apologize for any under-delivering of any promises formally given. I did talk to JLP, and even though obviously the first week is over, I still think that's a really fun chat. If anyone hasn't checked that out, like we talked about the potential of like US Survivor versus Australian Survivor. I said South Africa, but he kind of just like kind of shifted that and was like US versus Australia. Very fun stuff. And like we did have the preseason cast assessments, which, you know, you might still need. A couple of people didn't get confessionals in these 3.5 hours. Maybe you want to go back to that if you didn't already. As you said, Renap. Already, yeah, we did Space Jam. Survivor South Africa is happening. If you want more Survivor in your life, if you're currently watching that, we spoke to the great Nick Iadanza last week. And then we've got a merge episode coming up with Graham from Survivor South Africa Champions, talking tribal as well on 10 Play, and it's also a podcast. So you can look that up, even if it's hard for you to get the link out of Australia. That's like the sharp takes, you know, that's like immediately after if you want like our initial thoughts, and then RJP, like, deep dive it, talk about slinkies, go into a strange direction. That's what we do. So that's kind of the divide. Next week on RHAP, I will have the great Sarah Talik from Australian Survivor 2017 on with me. And I'm super excited about that because she's one of my absolute favorite players. And it's going to be a really good
great
time.
Great guest.
Yeah. So I'm excited about it. That's like two great guests to start us off, Rob. Wouldn't you agree?
I certainly would agree. I think that you are building better guess as the season goes on, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, I knew I had to get you. We got some questions. They're like, Rob, are you going to watch the whole season?
You know, it's so hard for me because I have like, Big Brother is on right now. And then also, but I would love to watch the whole season.
Yeah, I'll just let you know how George is doing. Just keep you updated.
I want to keep up with it. It's just a challenge right now with the amount of other like things that I am watching. It'd be nice if like my kids watch it. I could just be like having it on all the time.
As you said, you have a family.
I have a family, but I also have like a season of old Survivor watching simultaneously also.
Exactly.
So, and then I have like times when I'm talking about Survivor when I can't be also watching Survivor at the same time.
I hear you. Like, I get it. I get what you mean. Mm-hmm. A lot of Survivor to watch and talk about.
I can't be higher about this first week of Australian Survivor. I really loved it.
Okay, great. I love that. You enjoyed all of it. That's awesome. Thank you for coming on to talk with me about it. I had a great time chatting to you. It was really
all
fun.
Right.
Yeah.
You're in good hands, everybody. Excited for the new season of Australian Survivor.
Yeah, we're going to have a really good time with it. I'm going to throw to the exit interview with Gavin. Again, that's what we have coming up, but I hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you, Rob, again. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and now enjoy the exit interview. Bye.
G'day, Shannon. How are you?
Great. Gavin, thank you for coming onto the podcast. As well as a Survivor superfan, I'm actually a footy superfan, so I'm a little starstruck to talk to you.
Oh, right. Where are you based, Shannon?
I'm in Melbourne. I'm a big Hawks fan, but I won't hold it against you.
Oh, that's all right. No problem. All good. All good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on to the podcast.
But I'm not happy to be here so soon, but anyway.
Yes, of course. I mean, look, I was upset to see you go. They could have targeted, any of the three of you, and I thought I would have liked to see a lot more from you, definitely. What did you make of being targeted of the three? Is there a reason you think that they really went for you over Simon and Emmett?
That's the million-dollar question, I think. Look, personally, I think, I don't know, I mean, maybe if they look back on it, they probably say, well, yeah, maybe we should have gone for Simon or Emmett because they could have worked with me going forward. Just the type of nature that I have as a person, I already built relationships with everyone on that tribe. So I was a bit shocked, as you can see on the episode, when my jaw hit the floor. I just honestly thought they'd go for Simon or Emmett over me. They kept talking about breaking up the big three, I guess. And look, it was just one of those things where we'd made, you know, some mistakes. I mean, inviting Big D in, or we, you know, I guess Simon was leading the alliance, inviting Big D in, who was already in the other alliance. And he already had a foundation in their alliance. So it was always a huge risk that he was going to come in and feed the information back to them, which that's what happened. And he led us into the line dead then and to vote for Karen. And she played the idol, and that was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, they did talk a lot about, like, the three boys. They really wanted to target the three of you. What about that closeness with Simon and Emmett? Like, why did the three of you bond so quickly in the game?
Yeah, I know. It just sort of happened, and we were just sort of, you know, doing things together, and not as much as you'd probably think, what was shown. I don't think we were doing all that much stuff, you know, as much. It was just, I thought we were building into that, and just one of those things where it really came back down to that, the first vote when Flick was in our alliance and she flipped on us. So it really, if you take it back, if you peel the layers back, that was where the damage was done, because we were out of the numbers from that very first vote when Flick didn't vote with us. So that set us up to be vulnerable going forward, unless we'd found an idol that we could use correctly to get us back on track. That was a big dagger in the heart, which we didn't recover from.
Yeah, what didn't we see of the Braun dynamics? Because it's obviously so split so early. What didn't we see from those dynamics to really show us why there's that huge divide within the first three episodes?
Yeah, well, it happened in the first... it was a tricky one with Flick. I think we all saw that her and she even said that she really liked Shannon, and that she couldn't go and vote against her and vote for her. They started to build a relationship, which was more down her path. She obviously didn't develop the relationship with Chelsea or Danny as well as the one with Shannon. So that was a key to it, I think. And then we were just scrambling, I think, to try and get that extra one in, which meant that we had to invite Big D in,
mm-hmm.
Danny in, which was a mistake, and we were sort of didn't get off to a good start, did we, as an alliance?
How confident were you in Danny voting with you before, obviously, the blind side? As you said, he was added in late. Like, was there apprehension from you? Because we did see you were shocked to go home.
Yes. Good point, because I had a really good relationship with Big D, like a really good one, like, you know, from every day. I mean, I could list off quite a few conversations and laughs that we were having. I'm having tears rolling out of my eyes, laughing with him and hugging him. Like, we were building on a relationship, you know. So that was a huge shock. I never thought, that's why I even said, I think you said, no, we were good with Big D when I was speaking to Emma at the well. We all get good. Let's leave it. Bro, we're all good. Let Big D's in, because Emma obviously didn't trust a lot of things as well, and understandably so now. And yeah, that was a big shock. And just goes to show, in this game, you don't know when people are going to start playing hard. And they started to play hard really early. I mean, you know, trying to get, you know, the first vote was a, you know, blind side. That was a tricky, we were trying to do a blind side with Shannon, the very first vote. Normally they're just simple, straight numbers votes, aren't they? And this one with Big D that came in on the second tribal council and played that big move, that's why I was in so much shock. I didn't think he'd do that. I felt we'd made some good inroads with our relationship, some good laughs we had, and it's just the game. People still have to, you know, make moves, or you just don't know what they're plotting, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm sure that that would hurt. We all really like Danny, but he can, like, smile to your face. He's, like, the lovable giant. And then, I guess, like, turn around and really make the move against you. And we saw in the first vote that, as you said, it got a little confusing. You voted incorrectly. There was clearly a miscommunication here. Like, just talk us through what happened with this vote.
I know. It was quite funny how they played it, which was really good. I don't know what your thoughts were, but I thought it was really funny. You see my little sheepish face there when, and rubbing my chin when they're talking about, oh, we haven't got the numbers right here. Who flipped? Well, obviously, flipped. That was where the real damage was done.
Yeah.
And so me voting outside our alliance didn't matter. We didn't have the numbers because we were trying to pull in enough numbers, and Flick was the one that did the damage. So thankfully, it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
And my vote didn't cause the damage. So there was no, you know, collateral damage there. But yeah, a lot of conversation. We've got, at one stage, we're all going for Janelle, and then it was Shannon, and then it was the first tribal council. So a lot of scattering, and there was a lot of scrambling going on in a short period of time. And there's another thing that happened, sort of got me thinking about Janelle, which I can't really get into, but a lot of things happening, very tricky stage of the game. And I sort of, I would have just loved for one of them to say, right, you know, we're good, we're on Shannon.
But yeah.
It didn't happen. And I learned a lot from that first tribal council. I learned an awful lot. And it just goes to show that you got to be sure, you got to make sure you're really sure, because it's so important that you get the vote right. And it does happen from time to time, but it didn't really matter in this regard. But going forward, I was switched right on. I was like, whoa, okay. It's like, you got to check before you go in, make sure we're all on this right, this all cool, we're all sweet, blah, 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 high five, let's go. It was a good learning curve for me.
Yeah.
In the game, you see going forward that they all start coming into their own at the tribal council, or they start learning or feeling more comfortable with the vote. So you gain more experience as you go along. You become a better player the more tribal councils that you go to, and the longer you stay in the game. Because I come out of the game now feeling I'm a much better player, like much better player.
And did you never tell them that had been your vote? Because we see that you're like, I'm just going to sit on this. Is that, did they never find out in the game that you'd got it wrong?
No, that's right. They did, because like, I was going to just tell them. I thought, well, see, you know, Simon was dealing with flipping. So there was an issue there. And you know, we had to deal with that. And I thought, you know, I'll just let this one slide because my vote didn't really count. It didn't matter. That was the main one. I didn't want them to think that, you know, I was going to be making these sorts of mistakes, or I didn't. I just felt a little bit embarrassed. More than anything, I was just a little bit embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back in it, I don't need to be, because it was a tricky part of the game.
Yeah.
There was a lot of conversations flying around at that stage. And but like I said, it was a good learning curve, and it made me actually a better player.
Coming into it, what was your Survivor fandom like? Had you watched a lot of the show before you played?
I've been watching the last few seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I'm all cool with all that side of it. And then, you know, that happened on the first tribal council, which is understandable when you got, you know, two alliances, first tribal council, you're trying to get the numbers. A lot of conversations, a lot of movement and conversations and directions. It can happen from time to time. But if I'd stayed longer, that would never happen again, because I was onto it. Like I said, I felt so prepared after that going forward, and I'm just really disappointed and sad that I didn't get to go to a few more tribal councils and get to and play the game, because I didn't even really get to play my game. My strategy was to get in there and sort of just cruise along, not put a target on my back, but I guess I put a target on my back by getting close with Simon and Emmett. But it just sort of fell that way, because I was sort of, drawn into that. But and sometimes you just had to go with it. But I still thought that I'd be safe within that romance, because they had bigger targets on their back than me. So it didn't make sense to me. But anyway, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of people's opinion from what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think that strategy of hiding between like these two big guys with a lot of ego and personality is a great strategy. And I think maybe 9 times out of 10, they get the shot instead of you. And it just fell a different way. So I think that definitely would have worked. Also, if you think about it, Janelle did go home. So you accidentally voted correctly. So that's a good thing. So it worked out. But, you know, you said you've watched the last few seasons. There's, you know, a lot of football players, a lot of athletes that have played. Is that like a club? I want to know, like a football survivor club. Like, wait, did you reach out? Did they reach out? Like, you're connected, I think, in this like athlete survivor crossover realm that is only growing and getting bigger.
Yeah, it's starting to happen a bit. So they, you know, having representation, you know, for athletes and, you know, and certain codes. And yeah, the AFL person coming in every year is starting to, starting to happen now. So yeah, I'll start reaching out to those boys, that's for sure. And yeah, we've already started to connect, and I'll be good to catch up with them and have a bit more in-depth conversation over a beer about this amazing experience. Because it really was. It was an awesome experience. I mean, I was only there for 6 days. I sort of, you know, I was so shocked that I envisaged and mentally saw myself getting to merge, because I felt I'm going to be an agile player and work with different types of people and along the way. So it was a wonderful experience. I just wish I got the experience for a few more weeks rather than 6 days. So I guess that's that competitive nature coming out in me. Mm. I'll sort of never be satisfied, but I'm very grateful for the experience, because I really did enjoy, you know, playing the game of Survivor. Whilst I didn't get to play it a bit more and get to build on the relationships or new relationships that I'm sure I would have made going forward once, you know, tribal swap happened and all that sort of stuff. Connecting with, you know, people from the brains. You know, you sort of think about that strategy going forward as well. I never got a chance to experience that, but I really enjoyed my being on the show and experiencing that Survivor game.
Well, that is what I wanted to ask you as a bit of a last question, because your life experience is, you know, unlike any others, like an AFL legend and even stuff you've done after the game. Like, you're so accomplished in that way. And I know it was shorter than you would have liked, but like, where do you put Survivor in that pantheon of experiences, and how does it kind of compare to, you know, a legendary lifetime that you've had?
Yeah, thank you. You know, different away from the sport, you know, the accolades I've reached or achieved in sports, but it's definitely right up there with one of the most amazing experiences I've had. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It's right up there with one of the most amazing experiences I've had, and I'm going to make friends, you know, from this, you know, season that I'm going to have for a long time, and we're going to have an experience that we've, you know, had together, which we don't have with other people, so we can always connect in that way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing some of your insights. Definitely would have loved to see more. It was a heartbreaking blindside to end this first week. But thank you so much for coming on to chat with us.
Absolute pleasure, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Bye. There you have it, everyone. The exit interview, the recap for week one, which means week one is in the books. And if you are here, you must really want to be here. I hope you want to be here. You have watched like 3.5 hours of Australian Survivor this week, listened to like 2.5 hours of our content. So we really appreciate it. We always appreciate the support so, so much for you to check out the podcast and the recap and the exit and everything we're doing, engaging with the content in any way. Like, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I do these closes often on the Survivor South Africa podcast, but week one here for Australia, which, you know, it's just me, just kind of like my baby that is a lot. It's probably the most intense of the franchises that I cover for a lot of different reasons. When you are in it, you are absolutely in it. It is relentless. The Big Brother listeners are probably laughing at me right now compared to Big Brother. But for Survivor, like, this is your life now, and it's certainly my life. And I really appreciate anyone who joins in on the ride with some positivity and some love and just all the support that you give and you are giving if you are here currently listening to this message. So thank you so much again. I really hope that you enjoyed the content. I hope you will keep following along with us, that you will subscribe. Follow me at Shannon Gaines. I don't think I said that in the recap. Follow Rob at Rob Cicinino if you aren't doing that as well. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed and tell a friend as well. You know, tell some friends, get into International Survivor. Hopefully check out the content if you enjoyed enough to be here right now. So again, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I truly do appreciate all the support, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Good to middle.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million euro.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.